I call this meeting to order. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The agenda is approved. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the September 8th, 2023 meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The meetings are approved. We now turn to the report of the university. Good morning, everyone. This morning, as every morning I come to Hannah, I wave at the registrar. Steve Shablin serves as university registrar with a great group of folks, many of whom have been at the university for 15 or 20 years. And the good news is, Steve waves back. The report of the university since our last Board of Trustees meeting has been eventful. World and local events have seemed endless and sometimes collisional. But the work of the university, exemplified by the work of our registrar, continues. Steve waves at me from the office and then goes back to the duties of ensuring registration, class changes, and enrollment in spring classes, which, reminder, begins on Monday. Even as some days seem long, the academic season has moved forward. Our students are learning, and earlier this week, the provost and I celebrated faculty promotion and tenure. Yesterday, the trustees and senior administrators toured the campus. We saw the places and spaces that we are building and the places we are planning. And we fed a newborn calf at the dairy barn. Students and staff met us at the greenhouse and told us of their projects and aspirations. It was a good day. So much of the news of the university is good, yet it can feel that there are weighty anchors on our upward ascent. Spartans, today we are holding these true truths, that there is good that is happening, but there are also matters arising that create pain and harm. I have hope for tomorrow because of our faculty, staff, and students, and their daily good work and striving that ensures our university mission of education, research, and outreach with impact is met. Supporting MSU's work is the financial position of the university. Senior Vice President and Chief Financial Officer and Treasurer Lisa Frace and her team have prepared audited financial reports for the board review. And while we enjoy a strong balance sheet and bond credit rating, primarily because of the value of the endowment, our operating margins are thin, depending as they do primarily on tuition and enrollment. The administration and board scrutinize every project to ensure that the priorities align to the needs of the campus. Among our priorities are a series of building projects, making this among the most ambitious times in the university's history. Rising from the ground this morning are our Multicultural Center and the Student Health and Wellness Center. Each have been designed with student voices and interests and map onto our strategic priority of student success. In addition, the board will be voting on our capital outlay five-year plan, including recommendations to the state regarding an engineering and digital innovation center, which will provide opportunity for 1,000 new undergraduates and 400 new graduate students. And they've considered plans to proceed on our state-of-the-art dairy facility that is funded in part by the state of Michigan on behalf of a dairy industry representing 900 dairy farms, 97% of which are family-owned, and new greenhouses to support our world-class plant sciences. These buildings and our aspirations are vacant, however, if we do not do the work to enable our community to feel safe and welcomed across campus. Toward our shared goal of a safe community, last week we released an after-action review by the independent consulting firm SRMC regarding the response of the university to the violence on our campus on February 13th. The university will continue to put safety and educational measures into place as recommended in that report and through community feedback. Safety has seemed elusive to members on our campus who have been touched directly by the escalating war in the Middle East. I thank Yael Aronoff and Mahmoud Khalil for gathering the university together in the teaching and learning series, Conversations on Antisemitism and Islamophobia. MSU is a diverse community that embraces the possibility for change because of our engagement with others. Part of that change is envisioned by the recent Summit on Black Equity by 2030 and the work we do as a consequence of these gatherings. The work of our physical campus and individual psychological safety is ongoing, knowing that a university can never ensure, but rather do all we can to best enable individual growth and understanding, and in so doing, enable student, staff, and employee success. Transformational buildings and intentional work on the diverse university as a place of belonging opens opportunities for incoming students, as does the newly announced Spartan Tuition Advantage. MSU was one of the first universities to offer tuition-free scholarships to Michigan residents, and once again, we are redefining college access with this expanded program. The Spartan Tuition Advantage program reduces the financial barriers that can stand between students and their future success through a world-class higher education degree. And the university is grateful to Provost Yitzko and his office for leadership on this matter. Since the board last met, I had the opportunity to tour MSU and stakeholder facilities around Midland and Bay City. So many students, families, and businesses are being served by our 4-H and Extension and MSU Extension folks in these communities. And I'm so impressed by the research happening at places like the Axia Institute on MSU's St. Andrews campus in Midland, which focuses on value change solution. And the Saginaw Valley Research and Extension Center in Frankenmuth, with its focus on dry beans, sugar beets, and wheat. Before I close, I want to congratulate our women's soccer team for earning their second consecutive Big Ten title. Congratulations, too, to our volleyball team, which continues to build excitement for the program and recently set an attendance record. And speaking of athletic feats, I want to thank all the ROTC members from both MSU and the University of Michigan who ran the game ball between Ann Arbor and MSU and Alex's great state race last Friday. Finally, I want to thank two influential members of our university community. First, Dr. Linda Green for her service as Dean of the MSU College of Law. Dean Green is the inaugural dean following the college's full integration into MSU and has decided to step down from her role to focus on her scholarship and writing at the start of next year, including the finishing of her upcoming book on Thurgood Marshall. Dean Green, thank you for your service to the college and the university. And on behalf of a grateful university, I thank Kathy Wilbur, Senior Vice President for Government Relations, who, after an accomplished and extensive 45-year career, with more than 22 years in higher education administration, announced she will be retiring in January. Kathy has provided guidance and legislative strategy for many of our key initiatives, including the dairy facilities, greenhouses, the Engineering and Digital Innovation Center, EFRIB, and the Center for to Prevent Mass Violence. Kathy also served on the Board of Trustees and is a loyal Spartan with 3 degrees from MSU. Thank you, Kathy, for your contributions to your beloved alma mater. Let me end by saying thank you again to Steve Shablin for the work that he does and for waving. Thank you for exemplifying the daily work of individual Spartans who continue to do the good work of the university in the face of challenging circumstances. Thank you to our students, faculty leaders, and our incredible staff. The university endures because individually and collectively we come together around that which is necessary to change the world we found and make it better for those who come in our footsteps. I now call upon Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher to invite public participation on items germane to the agenda.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to the public participation on items germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who's signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We'll now hear from William Rogers, who is the sole item that is germane to the agenda. William, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I think I got pushed to a different place on the agenda than what I planned on being. But my name is Bill Rogers. I'm a farmer from about 12 miles south of here. Over the course of 60 years, I've raised over 3,000 head of cattle. I haven't public spoken in a while, and it gets me a little nervous. I've been really close to MSU. I have had three family members that graduated from the Ag Division. I'm bringing you a problem. I hope I'm bringing you a solution. We have problems in the ag community that we don't have veterinaries that will come out to the farm. In MSU here now, you have small animal, you have horse, and then you have the in-between, which are the animals that I'm talking about, the meat animals, the pigs, the cows, whatever. If they get sick, you can't bring them to MSU. You can't physically pick up a cow that weighs 2,000 pounds, put her in a trailer, and bring her here for a vet. And we don't have anybody in Ingham County that will come to the farm. We've got all kinds of veterinaries, but we don't have any that will service this community. We're not the only ones with a problem. Indiana's got a problem. Kentucky's got a problem. Senator Stabenow has actually submitted a Senate bill to get tuition refund, to get more people in this arena. And I know you're looking for a dean for this, so I'm hoping that maybe you can talk and find a dean that can address this, because it's terrible. It's terrible when you lose animals. It's like losing a family member. I've personally lost like 30 head in a spring. You know, that's bad. I can tell you about farmers here in Ingham County that's lost 60 all at one time. And, you know, that can devastate a farm. We need that, whatever it takes to make it happen. And I'm going to give you a little bit of history. MSU, years ago, used to send their vet students out into Ingham County. That might be a plausible thing that might work. But it's terrible to not be able to reach out and touch the meds you need and what have you. What we've gotten into, I've heard stories of people with 2,000 head of cattle that are medicating their cattle with no veterinary experience, formal. They're doing it because they have to, you know. I was pushed into that, and that's a terrible way to be. When you look at your animal and you say, well, what am I going to do? I can't get a vet here to take care of it. Do I medicate it with what I've got and hope it comes out? Thank you for your time, and if you've got any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. That concludes this portion.
I now call upon Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage, to introduce the research presentation for this meeting.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd like to tell a story today, I think, about something that's very important at MSU, and that is our basic research in veterinary medicine. It is a real highlight of the institution. MSU is unique in that we have two medical schools, an allopathic and an osteopathic medical school, a college of nursing, as well as a veterinary school. The opportunities for those healthcare providers to interact is really something that I think is really emerging as a new field of one health. We look at animals and humans as maybe human medicine. We don't worry about that we consider quite distinct from veterinary medicine. But, in fact, animals suffer many of the same maladies that humans do, cancer, osteoarthritis. And so you're going to hear today some very fundamental research, which I think has great application for animal patients, but also opportunities for translation into human medicine. So our speaker today is Dr. Valerie Johnson. She joined MSU 3 years ago from Colorado State University. She's an assistant professor in small animal critical care. And as you'll learn from her presentation, she also has a strong interest in exotic species and wildlife as well. She earned her PhD in immunology from Colorado State and completed her DVM at Tufts University. While at CSU, she developed new protocols to grow mesenchymal stem cells. These are multipotent stem cells derived from bone marrow, and to apply those in a variety of contexts, and she'll describe that today. Over the past 10 years, she's been investigating the effects of these mesenchymal stem cells as a therapeutic modality for various disease processes, including multidrug-resistant infections, immune-mediated diseases, and arthritis. Her research questions seek to elucidate the mechanism by which these cells exert a therapeutic effect. She's participated in several clinical trials with dogs and exotic species for a variety of inflammatory and infectious diseases. Her current research interests include investigating the potential antiviral effects of mesenchymal stem cells and comparisons of such cells and their therapeutic effects between species. So I'd like to also congratulate her on being awarded a Career Development Award, or a K-12 Award. This is a two-year institutional award to promote collaboration between research institutions. Please welcome Dr. Valerie Johnson.
Hi there. My name is Dr. Valerie Johnson, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all about some of my research, which I'm very excited about. I could talk to you for hours, but luckily they won't let me. So here we go. There we go, if I can figure out how to work the mechanisms. So as was said, my research interests include infection and the immune system as well as inflammatory diseases. And in particular, I wanted to know, can we better harness the immune system to fight off some of those diseases? This slide just shows you why there's a need for such a thing. So in the early 1900s, we discovered antibiotics. It was a great discovery. However, just as soon as we discovered them, the bacteria discovered a way to circumvent them. And so what you're seeing on the top slides, middle and right, are that the incidence of multi-drug resistance infections have increased dramatically over the past 20 to 30 years. And with that increase in multi-drug resistant infections, we've also seen a decline in the production of new antibiotics. Another reason why these infections can be so hard to eradicate is that oftentimes they'll go into a different state and produce a biofilm. So the middle right panel on the bottom shows an electron micrograph of a biofilm infection. And you can see that these bacteria are producing this sticky glycocalyx. And with that, they can stick onto just about any surface. On the bottom right-hand corner, you see a heart valve that has an infection in it. And you can see the patient is deceased because these infections are impossible to eradicate. So my area of interest was, how can we better help the body to eradicate these infections? Because clearly anything we're giving to them, the bacteria find a way around. The area that I have worked in is mesenchymal stem cell therapy. And what these cells are is they are adult-derived stem cells. So we create them from not only bone marrow but also fat and blood. And these cells can turn into a couple different cell types under the right conditions, bone marrow, cartilage, and fat. But they can't turn into every cell of the body like an embryonic stem cell would. And initially, we thought that by giving these cells, we'd put them in a joint and they'd turn into cartilage, but we found that that wasn't true. We found that actually they had effects on the cells of the immune system in the body, and that when we put them into an animal, they actually did various things to the immune system depending on the situation they found themselves in. So we asked the question, would they be effective in a biofilm infection, as they'd been demonstrated to show some antibacterial activity? So this mouse model that we used, we take a piece of surgical mesh and we put some bacteria on it and put it right under the skin of the mouse. They develop a little abscess. And these abscesses don't respond to any therapy at all. You can give them antibiotics all day long. So we hypothesized that if we took these cells and we put them in with some substances that made them think they were in an infected environment, that they then might be pre-activated and better able to fight these infections. So in the middle right panel on the slide, you can see two mice. The bacteria is bioluminescent. You can see it in blue. And the mouse on the left got antibiotics. The mouse on the right got activated stem cells and antibiotics. You can see that mouse has completely cleared this infection that are very difficult to clear. On the bottom left-hand corner, you see, again, two mice. The one on the left got activated stem cells, and the one on the right got resting stem cells. And the stem cells are labeled in red. So you can see a lot of them are in the lungs because that's where they first go when you inject them IV. But in the animal that got activated stem cells, you can see that there's a lot of them right around that circle, which is the area of the wound, whereas in the animals that got resting stem cells, there's not quite as many there. So we think that the reason why these stem cells work so well is, one, they were better attracted to the area of infection. Two, they cause the immune system to better be able to take up, our white blood cells rather, to better take up these bacteria and kill them. They also change some of the cells from an inflammatory to an anti-inflammatory or wound healing phenotype, so helps to heal the wound after, and they also directly killed the bacteria. This next slide has a little bit of graphic pictures, so prepare yourself. Next, we wanted to see if it worked in multi-drug-resistant infections. And these dogs that you see on the right are dogs that came to our hospital at the end of their rope. They had infections which no antibiotic could treat, and they were enrolled in my clinical trial. And in my clinical trial, we accepted dogs who had one or more multi-drug-resistant infections for which current therapeutics were not having any effect. The dog at the top actually had a bone plate which couldn't be removed. It kept getting infected and breaking open. The next step would be amputation, but he couldn't have his limb amputated, so he was facing euthanasia. We were able to clear up that wound with intravenous activated stem cells, and you can see in the bottom two panels that it was effective as well. And indeed, overall, we cleared up completely 75% of the really bad things that were presented to us, and all animals showed clinical improvement. So then we thought, if we're treating wounds and we really want the stem cells at the site of the wounds, why can't we put them right there? However, when you do that, they all kind of leak out. We tried. So our next project, and this is the subject of my K award, is to try and develop what we call a living bandage. So this bandage would be composed of a biomaterial that is compatible with the tissues and would eventually dissolve. But in that material, we insert living stem cells. And so in there, they can sit, they can migrate out to where they need to go, but they don't just run out of the wound. Now, working with some other researchers around this campus, I discovered that many other people had similar ideas, and they've been using nanoparticles that had antibacterial activity and also oxygen-releasing activity because wounds need oxygen to heal. So our idea was, could we combine these technologies, put them together in this bandage, and then engineer a layer of skin cells over them so that the wound wouldn't be prone to reinfection and would indeed help heal? So this is still in the very early stages, but we're very excited about it. The other part of my work, as has already been mentioned, is osteoarthritis. And the reason that we think stem cells would work in osteoarthritis is because it's a very inflammatory condition. It is currently in the top five leading disabilities in the U.S. today, and it has a very complex physiology that involves severe inflammation not only at the joint but throughout the body. Currently, the only therapeutics that we have for it are listed in black, and that is physical therapy, anti-inflammatory medications, pain medications, and ultimately joint replacement. So there's no way to actually treat this disease without just treating it symptomatically. Mesenchymal stem cells are a new therapy that we propose to use to treat this disease. We first treated the video's not playing. Oh, there we go. We first tried this in a guinea pig model of naturally occurring arthritis. They develop arthritis by 2 years of age, and we measured their ability to run on this treadmill. We found that they could run better, faster, and had increased mobility. How did we get there from there to elephants and giraffes? Well, the local zoo caught wind of a trial we had done in dogs with naturally occurring arthritis where they did very well and said, we have this elephant. So we tried using stem cells in this elephant. Whoops, technologically impaired here. I can't advance my slide. There we go. So this is an elephant at the zoo who had a previous injury to the knee. And in this video, you can see that she is unable to even bend that knee. She swings it around and is having a really hard time getting around. The picture on the right is a thermogram showing severe inflammation in the hip and the knee. We gave this elephant stem cells. And again, can't advance my slide. I swear I know how to do this. Okay. So in this video, you can see 3 months after stem cell treatment, she's walking out onto exhibit. Whoop. And she stops. Oh, there she goes. And she's bending her knee 100% of the time. So we did end up treating her again about a year later as it started to get worse again, and she is still currently living at the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo in Colorado. The other thing that I was interested in is, does it have an effect on viral diseases? And so there's a viral disease in elephants, which is highly fatal and is a big problem in zoos and in the wild, for which these animals get intensive treatment and still 50% of them die. So we looked at this viral model in cell culture and found that stem cells did indeed decrease lysis of cells in the lab. We then moved on to a clinical trial in elephants. This is an elephant who was very sick. We didn't think she was going to make it. She received 2 stem cell treatments and the standard of care, which is intensive treatment. And she also is alive and healthy today, living at Oklahoma City Zoo. I do have a smattering of other things going on, and more than I can even tell you in 8 minutes. Our other clinical trial that we have ongoing right now is looking at the effect of stem cells in pancreatitis in dogs, which is a very inflammatory condition in both dogs and humans, for whom right now you treat only with supportive care. And it still, people and animals die from it. So we've only treated a couple of dogs so far, but it's going well so far, and I'll have more to report later. We also are working with a company who has developed a diagnostic test for both infection and ability of the wound to heal, and it's being used in humans, and they wanted to know, could we use it in dogs? It's a bedside test, literally looks like a COVID test, and can give you information on how to treat the wound. So that's ongoing as well. So in summary, we think that mesenchymal cells have a variety of applications, both in infections, viral and bacterial, and in osteoarthritis and other inflammatory diseases as well. They can be used in a variety of species, and we're currently trying to compare the action of stem cells from different species, as well as working on our living bandage and many other things. All this research doesn't happen without a lot of help, and this is just a list of some of the researchers and technical people who have helped me in this journey along the way, and a couple of lovely ladies from my lab. And with that, I will take any questions.
Dr. Johnson?
Yes.
I see in your presentation that you're working with UCLA to try it on humans. What's the time frame for this to be applicable?
Humans? That's a great question. The work that I'm doing with UCLA, because this is not an FDA-approved drug for this application, it has to go through FDA approval. So right now what we're trying to do is get it approved for compassionate care. So these are people who have multi-drug-resistant infections for which there is no treatment, and they will go to hospice. And so trying it in this group of people, we've proved its safety in animals and are on the way to proving its safety in people. There have been tons of trials done. So right now we're trying to get that paperwork done, and we're hoping, you know, within the next 6 months or so that we'll be able to try it out in some people that don't have any other options. And from there we can continue to give evidence to the FDA. This is a very useful and very innovative treatment and is safe. And hopefully, I would say, you know, these things take a lot of time. But I would say, I would hope within the next 5 years, we would be able to get this out as a treatment.
Exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Any other questions?
Dr. Johnson, we thank you for your path-breaking translational research.
Yeah.
And thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I now call upon Interim Provost Yaitsko to present the personnel actions.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. Trustees, I present for approval the items on the October 2023 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following tenured faculty appointments. Artem Rugovsky, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Pathobiology, Diagnostic Investigation in the College of Veterinary Medicine, with tenure, effective December 15th, 2023. The action includes the recommendation of Harlan Barnett, interim head football coach, Department of Intercollegiate Athletics, subject to contract with effective dates of September 12, 2023 through March 31, 2024. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. Interim
is
President
there,
Woodruff.
Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second. Support.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
We now move to the Board of Trustees committee reports and other items regarding board approval. Trustee Rima Vassar will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Good morning. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby adopts the 2025 capital outlay project request and five-year capital outlay plan included as attachment A heretofore.
We have a motion. Do we have support?
Support.
Barb Krantz is here for discussion.
Good morning. The state of Michigan process requires that public universities and community colleges annually submit their five-year capital plan. We also have an opportunity to present or to request funding from the state for one capital project that is part of that plan. As was mentioned earlier by President Woodruff, the Engineering Digital Innovation Center is being recommended for submitting to the state of Michigan. The engineering project, the EDIC, is a new center that will support the emergence of a strong and transformative ecosystem focused on the convergence of digital and physical technologies. It will bring together a range of teaching, learning, and research activities across multiple colleges and disciplines to create an energized, innovative, and entrepreneurial community focused on the digital futures. The project will also support increased enrollment both in the undergraduate and graduate level and focused on computational and digital literacy disciplines and in graduate-related programs. Would also equip the MSU graduates with skills in computational sciences and digital literacy necessary for postgraduate success. And we would look forward to it becoming MSU's Center of Excellence in Advanced Manufacturing, Material Science, Ultrafast Science, and Quantum Computing, including Heterogeneous Microelectronic Technologies. Again, it's a multi-college effort, and we're looking forward to state cost participation with that. Are there any questions?
Thank you very much. All those, is there any discussion? Yes, Trustee Byron.
I would just have one item. Barb, yes. You did a great job. We had a tour yesterday, so we saw the renderings, but I would like Dr. Woodruff to talk about the EDIC project because you bring the excitement and life to us.
So. Well, very good. It's something I love talking about, which is that Michigan State University has innovated in education two times in the past, and now this will be the third revolution in education. It is where we are inverting the college model. So instead of a student going to a college, the colleges will come to students. And as we enter into the new generation of digital innovation, more and more students across multiple disciplines, including the humanities, including communication sciences, need to be part of what it is that we are creating for our future. And so by bringing together seven colleges, two units, including EFRIB, into this new domain, we will attract 1,000 new students to the digital, to their digital futures, and new graduate students who will build the new knowledge for a new generation. There is an estimation that we need 680,000 new jobs in this arena, and this effort will enable a workforce that's going to live long for the state of Michigan and our economic power in the future.
Thank you.
That was even better yesterday when the rain.
Well, that's fine, but you give life to us.
I can go even further. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Dairy Facility Research and Teaching and Learning.
We have a motion. Do we have support?
Support.
I believe George Smith is here to talk. Now, George talks really well. I also can, you know, wax very poetic about this, but George does really well on this.
I know you can, Interim President Woodruff. Chairperson Vassar, Interim President Woodruff, members of the board, on behalf of the administration of the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, College of Veterinary Medicine, and the entire Michigan agricultural community, it is my extreme pleasure to be here to speak on behalf of the resolution to start construction of the new dairy teaching and learning facility. Dairy is the number one contributor to the agriculture economy in the state of Michigan. However, that future is in jeopardy. Our dairy industry is suffering a whole host of challenges related to a workforce, including large animal veterinarians, as we heard about previously, including challenges related to ensuring a secure future in terms of environmental sustainability, and in terms of securing a bright future in terms of economic viability. This vision for this new facility, which will be made possible through the creative talents and ingenuity of our faculty here at Michigan State University, will create a new path forward for our dairy industry, new facilities to train that next generation workforce, new facilities with a controlled environment and state-of-the-art technology to introduce students that wouldn't otherwise be interested in large animal veterinary medicine to careers in large animal veterinary medicine, to help our producers continue to lead the country in milk production per cow, but more importantly, to contribute to the goals of the state of Michigan in terms of the healthy climate plan and transition to renewable energy. A big focus on this project, and really what helped us sell it with your support and our stakeholders' support to our legislature, was the focus on environmental sustainability. We have a vision for working to scale technology for anaerobic digestion, basically to convert manure into renewable natural gas that can be sold at a premium for dairy farms of all sizes. A vision to separate the nutrients out of the manure, the nitrogen and phosphorus, providing another source of revenue for our dairy producers and reducing the environmental impact of manure being spread on fields. A vision for harvesting clean water from dairy facilities and reusing that water in an efficient fashion to irrigate crops. And finally, and very significantly, a vision for really assessing the environmental impact and carbon footprint of dairy farms to learn what that carbon footprint is and look at strategies to reduce the carbon footprint and maybe create a model for the future. We have dairy farms that are carbon neutral or even carbon positive. Think about the benefits of that to society. Think about the benefits to our producers. So as you can tell, I'm really excited about this project and appreciate the opportunity to speak in support of it today.
Thank you.
That was intellectually rousing. Thank you, George. Any other discussion? Well, it is my privilege to call for this vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
Good job.
Okay, good job.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Dairy Facility Research and Teaching and Learning. The next one. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on the last one. Well, no, it's not the last one. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby approves the establishment of the Department of Dermatology, the Department of Radiation Oncology, the Department of Pathology, and the...
She missed two. That's all right. We'll do this, and then we'll go back. That's all right. That's all right.
Wait. Did I miss this one? Okay, I'm sorry. I'm glad, because that one I could not pronounce that next word that was coming. So good job, Dennis. No, that's not going to be for me. Good luck, Dennis. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Greenhouses Renovation and Addition, Research Expansion and Learning.
We have a motion. Is there support?
Support.
George, come back. another intellectually rousing rendition of why we're going to do the green.
Yeah, well, thank you for the opportunity again. This is a request absolutely critical to our entire Michigan agricultural community and really critical to the future of Michigan State University and our excellence in plant sciences. Our greenhouse facilities are directly or indirectly linked to all of the 300-plus commodities in the state of Michigan. They are the foundation of our plant science research programs. That's where research starts before it ever goes out into the field and ultimately leads to application on farm. Our current greenhouses need a lot of help. Two-thirds built between 1955 and 1978. You saw that story yesterday, and I know some of you have been on tours previously. Couldn't be more excited that we're in a position to upgrade those facilities, both through renovation and new construction, again, made possible by an investment from the state of Michigan with your support that had the support of the entire agricultural community, recognizing that their future and food security in general for this country and beyond is dependent on research conducted in those greenhouses. And so you look at the impact in the future, whether we're talking about plant breeding for crops that have more nutritive value or resistant to climate change, whether you're talking about research on control of weeds and resistance of weeds to chemicals, whether you're looking at research on biological control for pests and pathogens, it all starts in the greenhouses. And my hope, and I know you share that hope, is we will continue to excel and lead the nation in plant science research. And we can't do that without this investment in greenhouse facilities and the head house and necessary support structure to support all the great research that takes place in those greenhouses.
Bravo. Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Congratulations.
Okay, so I did not read my script beforehand. A couple of things happened this week, so I was a little distracted. So the script, I should have edited ahead of time, so I apologize. I'm going to try it one more time. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project titled Biomedical Animal Resources. Thank you for the edit. And I think that's it.
Very good. We have a motion. Is there support?
Support.
Doug Gage, would you please
speak
to this matter?
So this is a project that's been underway for more than 2 years. And it was led initially by a fantastic recruit in the Global Impact Initiative, Dr. Anna Moore, who we recruited from Mass General Hospital and Harvard University. She was successful in applying for a very competitive facility grant from NIH called the CO6 grant. And it's really really aligned with our strategic plan. We have to be, in order to really provide our researchers with the ability to compete, they have to have access to state-of-the-art equipment. The facility is going to be located in a clinical center, and we hope to build an imaging suite around this. Dr. Moore and Dr. Beauchamp were successful in convincing the Siemens Corporation to donate a $5 million PET MR instrument. It'll be a really great opportunity for our faculty, graduate students, and postdocs to really develop some new innovations. Importantly, our Henry Ford colleagues are also quite interested in this. So I think that's another way we're going to bring together some great new research.
Very good. Thank you, Doug. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Thank you. I now call upon Trustee Dennis Denno to present the Committee on Academic Affairs report.
Thank you. As chair of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the establishment of the Department of Dermatology, the Department of Radiation Oncology, the Department of Pathology, the Department of
Otolaryngology.
What he said, which I would call head and neck surgery. The Department of Urology and the Department of Neurosurgery at the MSU College of Human Medicine.
Thank you. Is there support for this motion?
Support.
I would now like to note that EVP Dr. Norm Beauchamp is available to discuss.
Thank you. Thank you so much. The color of your skin and the county in which you're born in Michigan determine how long you live. people struggling with disease and lives lost every day. To do better, there's a structure. It's called the Academic Medical Department. It's a place where clinicians can seek to identify what can't they do for people, where researchers can do the same, where they can come together, they can find solutions, and they can meet those unmet needs. Some examples: brain cancer, throat cancer, breast cancer, skin cancer, women's health. Michigan State was unique in the Big Ten that we didn't have the departments that came together to do that work. A huge disadvantage. Six departments. Because of the relationship with Henry Ford and the work that we've done, we've now added close to 300 faculty that together are focusing on this work, and they came to Michigan State at no cost to Michigan State, but because they saw the importance of our mission and the desire to partner. So this is a quantum step forward, and a really important piece of this is this then is a place for our doctors and nurses and researchers to train to create the better tomorrow. There's a lot of people to thank about for this. I'd like to acknowledge Aaron Sousa, the Dean of the College of Human Medicine, who carried so much weight. I called on my colleague, the Provost, to rally in a huge way in a very short amount of time, so thank you. Thank you for that. Sandy Pierce, who is our trustee, who sat on the board of Henry Ford for a long time and helped shape it into a place that's remarkable. Our president has been very helpful supporting these efforts, and the chair of the STERCO partnership, the representative from Michigan State, has been Chair Vassar, who's played a pivotal role. So it's a nice example of a university working together to do good. It happens.
Very good. Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries. Thank you.
This concludes my report. Thank you.
Trustee Dan Kelly will now present the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance report.
Thank you, and good morning. The Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee met and reviewed the MSU staff, met with MSU staff and university external auditors, Plant Moran, the 2022-23 audit financial statements. The university received a clean opinion from the auditors, which indicates that MSU followed accounting rules appropriately and that the financial reports are an accurate representation of MSU's financial position as of June 30, 2023. No significant changes were made to Plant Moran's audit approach, which were reviewed by the committee prior to audit work commencing. No significant adjustments were proposed during the audit, and no material weaknesses in the internal controls or accounting policies and procedures were noted. Based upon this review and report, action is now recommended to make official the June 30, 2023 financial statements of the university. Therefore, as chairperson of the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee, I move that the board accept the audited financial statements for the year ending June 30, 2023.
Thank you. There's a motion on the table. Is there support?
Support.
And VP of Finance, Lisa Frace, is available if there's any questions.
Good morning, trustees. pleased to present the financial reports for fiscal year 2023. As Vice Chair Kelly has indicated, they are represent a clean audit and fairly present the financial position of the institution. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following option agreement with Scion Plasma, LLC.
A motion has been put on the table. Is there support?
Support.
Again.
Any further discussion?
Yeah.
How about that one?
Yeah.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions, the motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Trustee Kelly Tebe will now present the Committee on Student Life and Culture report.
Thank you. Senior Vice President Benny Gore provided us updates on the student rights and responsibilities that they've been working on that we should be getting next year, and also an update on the recreation, sports, and fitness, which we were told that they are basically bursting at the seams. So we're excited to have the new health and wellness center being built. So That concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Board Secretary Stephen Fletcher will invite public participation on other items.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. We'll now proceed to the public participation on items not germane to the agenda portion of the meeting. Each individual who signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. We'll now hear from Amanda Tomashow, followed by Angelica Martinez-McGee. Amanda? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I'm an MSU alumni, and for most of my life, before I even became a student on this campus, loving MSU was a part of my personality. My parents raised me on the banks of the Red Cedar, and I felt safe in my community until an MSU employee hurt me almost a decade ago, and I reported it, but I was dismissed, and he was able to hurt others. Now I can't put on my favorite MSU gear or cheer Go Green, Go White, or even see a Spartan symbol without feeling sad and sick to my stomach. I want to wear my Kelly Green hoodie again, and even more than that, I want to know that the people on this campus are safe. I wish you all felt the same. I wish we were more interested in safety and healing than sports and money and school spirit. Because what is school spirit anyway, when the school you have spirit for keeps showing up in the news for sexual misconduct, consistently sending the message, if you want to cross boundaries, this is the place for you. There have been so many opportunities to reflect and transform, but instead you have continued to employ, recruit, and uplift people that cause harm. You also haven't been fully transparent about your past. Just ask the Attorney General, my sister's survivors who keep coming in here and begging for transparency, or Brenda Tracy. How do you expect us to believe you'll do better in the future? According to the Academic Sexual Misconduct Database's website, there have been over 30 incidents involving people that were paid by MSU where policy violations were found since my report in 2014. By only ever thinking about how to protect yourself, you've allowed faculty member after professor after employee to prey upon students and patients and coworkers and advocates that are trying to help make this place safer than it has been. And while I know it's good that there are more people being held accountable, and it's a sign that more people feel comfortable reporting, it also makes it clear that sexual misconduct has been allowed to persist long after you promised to make this campus safer the first time I stood here years ago. Until you get to the point of zero violence, I'm begging you to please keep trying new things, improving your resources and services, and working to address the underlying campus culture, which is determined by the people who stay and have power, not by the students or the visitors who come and go. Please really think about what it means to be a safe campus. Imagine what it looks like. Imagine the details. How do the interactions between employees and guest speakers look? How do conversations between board members sound? How do professors treat their students? How do you protect the vulnerable individuals? When someone speaks out about being hurt or violated, how are they received? What types of services, resources, and options are offered to a person if they are harmed? What about the person that did the harming? What are their priorities on a safe campus with a culture of respect, and how do those priorities show up in the budget? You are all trustees. How does your campus safety and culture show up in your current budget? I would hope that your budget would reflect an investment in creating a safe environment for your students and community. However, I worry it would only make it clear that athletics and prestige and bringing in more money are much more important than the safety and dignity of the people on your campus. Please, it's time to change your priorities and actually make this a safer school. I want to be proud to be a Spartan again, and the people that visit this campus, be it once or every day, deserve to feel safe and protected. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda. We'll next hear from Angelica Martinez-McGee, followed by Melissa Hudez. Angelica, good morning.
Good morning. My name is not Angelica. Angelica is unable to be here today. She asked me to read a statement on her behalf.
Proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. This is a letter from Rachel Denhollander. Members of the board, it has been disheartening beyond expression to watch the events of the last few months unfold. to see that the exact same breakdowns and failures that led me and my sister to me and my sister's abuse repeated, despite those failures being specifically raised with board members in 2018 and 2019. In an eight-month process that the majority of former board ultimately rejected, I raised, among other issues, the following weaknesses that contributed to my abuse and the abuse of all my sisters. Specifically, a lack of training for the board on proper processes that should be followed in the abuse of abuse allegations, a lack of clear and distinct policies related to ethical violations, Title IX allegations, and employment-related allegations, and knowing which processes to trigger and how to run them. A poor communication channel and structure that intentionally left board members and the MSU president without the knowledge needed to exercise their fiduciary responsibilities when a prominent individual at the university, such as Larry Nassar or Mel Tucker, is accused of abuse or harassment. Contrary to certain board members' claims then and now, this is not an issue of victim protection or Title IX requirements. This is an intentional design flaw that allows leaders to attempt to wash their hands of failure by saying, we didn't know. In this eight-month process, I put forward multiple models for transparency related to thousands of privileged documents MSU is still hiding. It is not that those models were not available and clear. It is that those models were explicitly rejected. It is not that the timing wasn't right, as one board member put it, justifying the choice to refuse to support reform. Rather, it was that all efforts to comply with the Attorney General and embark on a process for assessment and reform were explicitly rejected. This process can be done with absolute respect for survivor, agency, and safety. This process can be done while fully protecting survivor, medical, and personal information. As an attorney and crisis consultant, I have personally worked on and overseen these processes regularly. Any leader who suggests this is dangerous for survivors is preying on survivors' trauma in order to obtain that outcome that rejects transparency. MSU had the opportunity to address these failures in 2018 and 2019 and explicitly rejected accountability and reform. But with the resurfacing once again of the same failures we warned would repeat, you have another opportunity to do what is right. Release the documents to the Attorney General. Take the first step, and then let's talk about what comes next. When I gave my victim impact statement in court, I pled with you to do better the next time. The prior board rejected that choice, and here we are 4 years later, the same problems. And here you are with another chance. Do it better next time.
Thank you very much. Also, we'll hear from Melissa Hudetz and then Daniel Moore after that.
Okay, I am Melissa.
Yep.
My name is Melissa Hudetz. I stand here today as a sister survivor on behalf of the 546 known victims, their parents, and families. Need I remind you, the sister survivors were on average 14-year-old minors at the time our abuse happened. This abuse has impacted and imploded families and communities alike. The release of documents in cooperation with the Attorney General's investigation has far-reaching implications in our community. And since there's no institutional accountability here, we are here. This time, showing up for our 14-year-old selves, our families, our children, and our community. We have once again sacrificed our mental health to be here. Because this board continues to perpetuate the cycle of trauma and abuse. At September's meeting, Sandy Pierce summarized the problem, saying, "We're trying to make the best decisions for the current and future university. I have no doubt about that. The problem is, you're talking about the institution, not the students. They are the institution. Doing what's best for MSU has significantly perpetuated the trauma of untold numbers of students. Students are far more likely to experience sexual assault on this campus than gun violence. 1 in 4 report sexual assault on this campus, according to your own No More survey in 2022. That doesn't include unreported assaults by known authority figures, similar to Dean Strampo, Larry Nassar, or Mel Tucker, people still hiding in the shadows under your watch. Diane Byram, what do you have to say for yourself? You knew about Mel Tucker since December 2022 and intentionally hid that information from several current board members. What a dismal lack of leadership you have shown as a senior member of this board, it's time for you to resign. Brianna Scott, the bickering you claimed that you wanted to end has found you on the front page, launching a public display of animosity toward your fellow board members. Did you or did you not stand in the way of justice for survivors? Did you tell the board to ask Becky Campbell what the sisters think? She actively worked against our vision for the exhibit at the MSU Museum. Becky has no right to speak for us. We're here. We've been here. Dana Nessel's spokesperson told the media Tuesday that she's never wavered in her request for the records of our case. This whole mess sounds a lot like DARVO: deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender. And it sure looks like you've betrayed us again. It's time for you to resign. Board members, what MSU needs is a public vote to release the documents like you promised to do when you were elected. That's your job now. Often those caught up in a cycle of abuse are unaware at first. Open your eyes. If you can't do your job on this board because of fear perpetuated by those representing the university or because of the politics of this board, you're caught up in it. But you have a choice. You have a seat at the table. You have the power. You can break this cycle of abuse and trauma if you have the courage. The truth heals. Thank you.
Melissa, thank you. We'll next hear from Danielle Moore, followed by Valerie Von Frank. Good morning, Danielle.
My name is Dr. Danielle Moore, and I'm a survivor of Larry Nassar. I'm asking the board to please give a plausible explanation as to why you will not release the 6,000 documents, or at the very least, why you will not have an open vote about releasing those documents. At this moment, I see it as pointless to actually ask for the records to be released, as the board has repeatedly and abruptly turned down each and every request, causing even greater trauma. Whatever is in the records must truly be damning. However, I do not believe MSU's name in regards to the Nassar case can become any more tainted. About 3 weeks ago, I was giving a speech at the university in South Carolina about the repeated childhood sexual trauma I experienced by Nassar within one of MSU's clinics. One of the university psychology professors approached me even before I gave my speech. The professor mentioned that Nassar and MSU's willful negligence is now being used as a case study, showcasing how trauma can be amplified when institutions put self-interests above individuals. Within classrooms, MSU's name is now tethered to one of the United States' most prolific sex offenders. MSU has repeatedly inflicted institutional betrayal and trauma. By not releasing the records, the betrayal and trauma continue and add to the ever-growing negativity that is already being taught and formulated in classrooms. Even though my words might sound harsh, I only speak the truth. I sincerely do not want the records released for malice or revenge. They need to be released for healing, transparency, and so others can learn how to stop this type of atrocity from happening again at MSU or elsewhere. No one should suffer from the mental and physical consequences that myself and other survivors have endured. As a result of Nassar's quote-unquote treatment, I have had 7 spinal surgeries. I am always in physical pain, and that pain makes me think of Nassar and MSU's complacency. I myself am a professor, and one of my beliefs as a teacher is that knowledge, even if it's painful and ugly, can bring about positive, powerful change. MSU needs to start looking at the individuals that they hurt and put aside the salvaging of MSU's name or the salvaging of any person who might be in this room today. As a person, a Nassar survivor, and a professor, I hope that MSU will eventually do the right thing. Unfortunately, it has been proven that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So prove me wrong.
Thank you, Danielle. We'll next hear from Valerie Von Frank, followed by Jennifer Hayes. Valerie.
I really did not want to get up here and talk to you guys again today. My daughter is getting married tomorrow, and I am standing here in this boardroom again because not one of you has the ounce of courage that these women have to be here 5 years after this case and to still be asking you to do the right thing. I cannot believe that you put these women through this again. Do you know what it takes for them to come up here? The physical cost to them? And they do it because it's the right thing. One of them's wearing a tattoo that says, Jen. I can't read it, sweetie.
I speak up for what is right.
None of you have done that. This is not just on the board either. This institution has not changed a lick since Nassar. You guys have still not answered what happened with Alan Haller and Mel Tucker. What actions did the university take? What were they followed up? Did you do anything at all until the newspaper came out, which is exactly what happened with Nassar? Are you covering up another William Strample situation where William Strample just put him back on the job and didn't do anything? Is that what's going on with Mel Tucker? You won't answer that question. I am here. I am supposed to be with my family. My brother, who is not well, I may never see again, is in Plymouth waiting for me to be at this wedding. My youngest daughter, who lives 2,000 miles away, is waiting for me at this wedding. And I am here. Because you know what, Diane Byram? Hell hath no fury like a mother whose child you have hurt. And you, Brianna Scott, have hurt. Because twice you have been the deciding vote in stopping these records from being released. You think this institution has changed? You read Miranda Dunlap's piece last year in the student newspaper, where you made students sit outside the financial aid office who were trying to go to the Center for Survivors, sexual abuse victims. You look at the question that your institution texted her in class, asking her in an email, what did your rapist sound like while he was raping you? If you people don't know this, shame on you. This institution is corrupt. It has not done what it needs to do. It doesn't respect the vulnerable. It doesn't respect minorities. You have racism on campus that you have not addressed. You have a picture of Hitler in your stadium. And what are you doing about it?
Thank you, Valerie. We'll next hear from Jennifer Hayes, followed by Stephen Patterson. Jennifer? Jennifer Hayes? Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Jennifer Hayes. An MSU alumni, a past MSU varsity athlete, and MSU coach. I am also a sexual assault survivor of Larry. MSU follows a pattern of abuse when they are put in the corner with a problem. It's called DARVO. We've heard it already this morning. Named by a truly esteemed researcher, Jennifer Fried, it stands for Defend, Attack, and reverse victim and offender.
We, the 546 survivors of the pedophile who worked here for decades, know it well. We were accused of seeking money and enjoying the fame of being victims of lying. That wasn't the public. That didn't come from the public. That came from the university. The university where I spent 5 years and received 2 degrees. That came from this university, which has never, despite the lip service, been held accountable for what happened here, and it still isn't. You can't pay for accountability. You forget so easily. MSU was already under an Office of Civil Rights investigation even before our perpetrator was made public. And then MSU acted when it became public in the news media. The same thing has happened with activist and rape survivor Brenda Tracy. We don't know what the university did or didn't do to make sure that the football coach didn't harm anyone else while the complaint was proceeding. Action followed swiftly after the news became public. Who knew what and when are the questions we have. In that case, and 5 years after our assaulter went to jail. Let's remember what the Attorney General told us in 2019 in an interim, not final, report. It said that the AG had been told the board was ready to fully cooperate with the AG's review. Unfortunately, it continued. The university failed to live up to this pledge. It fails to live up to its pledge by boasting about all the boxes it's ticked under the federal compliance orders that are really just designed to bring the school in compliance with basic minimum requirements of the laws around sexual violence. The university's approach of it's someone else's fault every time something awful happens has to end here and now. For example, blaming a third-party vendor that wasn't a vendor for the Hitler picture in the stadium, or blaming one man for all the victims in our case is a culture problem. Has to end here and now. Release the records. Truth heals. Thank you.
We will next hear from Stephen Patterson, followed by Dr. Christy Poitra. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Steve Patterson, Richland Township, Kalamazoo County, and I'm here today as your friend, and I'm here today to help you get on the right path. You only have to do one thing. Listen to me on this. It's really important. Reopen Kellogg Forest. Kellogg Forest was gifted to MSU in 1929. It's existed as the experimental forest and as a recreational area for 90 years, up until a few years ago when management was changed, and then things really changed. People were discouraged from going there. Photographers were subject to a $50 a day fee and an etiquette policy. It's in the last page of your packets. I hope you have them with you. 17 etiquette rules to follow. The Battle Creek Hunt Club has been going in there for decades. First, they were told they had to pack out the horse manure, and then they were banned completely. These are the people that started the Chef Center, therapeutic riding, first one in the world, world renowned. They're your neighbors down in Kalamazoo County, banned. Then COVID came along, and the main gates were closed to everybody. And we all understood that. But then after COVID, it was still closed. Various excuses were made, none of which added up. Claims of vandalism and problems with photographers and horseback riders. The place is closed, so nothing could have happened there. We have a testimonial. We started a petition. There's 1,000 signatures. And the testimonial that speaks for us, there's dozens of them. I've been going in there for over 40 years, have had several conversations with the manager. I understood when they were harvesting large trees to keep out, and then the excuse was the pandemic. Then he said, hey, it isn't a park. The Kellogg Forest is a very important place. This is a crazy world we live in, and people need these spaces to go and commune with nature, still waters, green pastures, the forest. The parking lot that has been made is a half mile down from the main entrance. It's muddy. It's dangerous because you have to cross a busy two-lane highway. Please reopen the forest. It needs to be done. It was closed under a false pretense. Don't be the same old MSU. This is your first step on the road to wellness. Thank you. Please reopen Kellogg Forest.
We'll next hear from Dr. Christy Poitra, followed by Nathan Fettis. Dr. Poitra? Okay, we will next... Dr. Pierce. The next speaker is Nathan Fettis, followed by Brianna Markoff. Nathan? Our next speaker then will be Brianna Markoff, followed by Candace Montgomery. Brianna?
Hello. Good morning. My name is Brianna Markoff, and I'm a fourth-year doctoral student in curriculum instruction and teacher education at MSU. I come to you today as a representative of the Graduate Employees Union. I'm holding a petition, which you all also have, with 1,293 signatures requesting that the recreation and wellness fee be made optional for all graduate students. We are delivering it today in the hope that you will decide in our favor prior to charging us this fee next semester. I offer three reasons the graduate student should not be required to pay this fee. First, we can't afford it. Second, we will be unable to use the new facility that the fee is financing. Third, it is not the graduate student's responsibility to finance the university's debt. The recreation and wellness fee is $340 per year. Graduate students cannot afford this fee. The living wage in East Lansing, that is what a single adult would need to make it in order to meet the cost of food, housing, transportation, and other basic necessities in this area, is $32,798 a year, according to the MIT living wage calculator. Most graduate students make well below the cost of living here. For example, a graduate assistant paid at the university minimum at level two, working fall and spring semester, will make $21,521 a year. Even with access to an additional $7,000 of summer funding, which is not guaranteed, this student would only make $28,529, coming in for over $4,000 short of what is needed to survive here. Graduate students aren't making enough to afford basic necessities. We should not be subjected to additional fees taken out of our already limited pay. Though some graduate students might take on extra work to try to make ends meet, international students are forbidden by federal law from doing so, so this is especially burdensome to them. Because teaching assistants are already exempt from this fee, research assistants and graduate assistants, already our lowest paid workers, are subjected to this additional cost for a facility they will likely never use. Most graduate students do not use the existing recreation facilities, and very few of us who are here today will have the opportunity to use the new pool that the increased fee is paying for. Even the medical students working all the way out in Grand Rapids are paying this fee despite living and working an hour from this campus. While we appreciate the university's effort to provide access to opportunities for wellness, this fee has the opposite effect as it creates undue stress and burden on workers who are already overworked and underpaid. Opportunities for attending to our health and well-being arise when we can stop work at the reasonable hour, put healthy food on our tables, and sleep well each night without wondering if we'll be able to make rent this month. As inflation has increased, these opportunities have become increasingly rare for many. Please support our wellness by making this fee optional. Finally, it is not graduate students' responsibility to finance the university's debt. Once again, we implore you to support our health and wellness by making this fee optional and supporting efforts to guarantee all students a living wage. With that, I will present the petition, and it has been delivered to the board. Thank you for your time and attention. It's in your packets.
Brianna, thank you very much. We'll next hear from Candace Montgomery, followed by Javon Simmons. Candace? We will next hear from Javon Simmons, followed by Maisha Stewart via Zoom. So, Javon, are you with us? Okay. Let us then perhaps turn to Maisha Stewart via Zoom, and then Enid Warren Moore. Maisha, can you hear us? Okay, thank you.
Hello, can you hear me?
Good morning, Maisha. How are you?
Good, there we go.
Good. good morning. Please proceed.
Sure, thank you for your time today. I would like to speak in favor of Chair Vassar. I've known her for almost 30 years. We joined our illustrious sorority together, and I've seen the whole of her. And when I say that, I've seen her, I know her as a mother, a wife, a soror, a leader, an educator, and a professional. She called me when I lost my mother this year, because unfortunately she knows that pain. I know her personality, and clearly anyone that entertains any type of sideshow drama does not know her. Instead of focusing on the issues that the brave women that spoke before me have presented. Is Rima kind and thoughtful? Yes. Is she brilliant, passionate about education? And a force? Yes. Is she direct? Yes. That does not make her a bully. It means she has the backbone to handle whatever comes at her. It means you are uncomfortable in her light. It's her resiliency, her commanding presence that quote-unquote threatens you, not her. And what a coincidence that a change was made recently to a chair being able to run for a second term based on seniority. Regarding the accusations against her, I was thrown off immediately by the hypocrisy. Chair Scott went to the news after acknowledging that that was against policy. If Chair Vassar is this horrible leader, why go to the news? Were we trying to bully her to resign? It won't work. Seems like it would have been easy to handle this internally if things were that bad. I'm not sure what was meant by it was you tried to handle it behind closed doors. Was there any actual proof, or are we supposed to just go by one person's letter? Rima is a fighter. She is fierce when it comes to doing everything she can to improve the educational system. She will not back down, nor should she. Chair Vassar, we love you through and through. And I have on a shirt that says, walk like the ancestors sent you, because they did. We love you. And everyone have a great day. Thank you.
Aisha, thank you very much. Our next speaker is Enid Warren Moore, followed by Stephanie Fagerman. Enid, are you here? We will move on to Stephanie Fagerman. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Board members.
When you were running for office, you were running on a platform that you would do what is good and what is right for the university, for students, and for the state of Michigan. You were elected by people of the state of Michigan to do what is right and what is good for the university, its students, and the state of Michigan. I'm standing here today in support of the letter written by Brianna Scott requesting the removal of, or resignation rather, of Rima Vassar. When you guys look at this letter and the facts, we would like you to do what is right and what is good for the university, its students, and the state of Michigan. This is not about party. This is not about race. This is about what is good for the university and its students and the state of Michigan. You guys are charged with a great responsibility. We appreciate the work that you've been doing. Please keep these things in mind and do what is right and good for the university, its students, and the state of Michigan. Thank you all so much for hearing me today.
Stephanie, thank you very, very much. We'll next hear from Tyriana Leslie, followed by Mike Balow. Tyriana, are you with us? Good morning.
Good morning. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Good morning, I'm Jordan Roebuck, parliamentarian for the Black Students Alliance. When I received news of Trustee Brianna's...
Are you reading on behalf of
Tyriana? I am. Yes, I'm a member of the Black Students Alliance. She's unable to speak today. When I received news of Trustee Scott's 7-page paper calling for Dr. Rima's removal from the board, I was confused and terribly disappointed at the fact that this letter would be released during this specific time for Michigan State, especially to the news. A core obligation of this board is to ensure protection and safety for their students. How is this call to remove Dr. Rima reflective of the promise from the board to ensure safety for students? The only way to know if students feel safe on this campus is by asking them, and it is of the board to serve the students on this campus. With that said, if you ask any Black students sitting here, it is nothing but the direct opposite of the promise of this university in protecting us to remove the only Black woman to ever serve as chair of the MSU Board of Trustees, one that is an empowered Black woman and one that has an existing relationship with the Black Students Alliance. Calling her a bully and condescending is terribly antithetical to who she is at her core. My first encounter with Dr. Rima was when she made a presentation to us in the summer, the Black Students Alliance. Her presentation was about love. Ever since that, she has been nothing but kind, sweet, and someone who encourages me daily to be proud of my Blackness. Nobody else on this board of the trustees has individually reached out to me and told me to be proud of my Blackness besides Chairperson Vassar. Her and her husband have been nothing but supportive of me. Dr. Rima has advocated for the Detroit Promise and many more initiatives to support and bring Black students onto this campus. I cannot say the same for other trustee members. Claiming that she is at the core of why MSU's accreditation has been jeopardized is a ridiculous statement to make. Every single trustee member here has work to do. Putting a Black woman at the front of this is nothing more than labeling her as a scapegoat. When thinking about why in heaven's name the board would embarrass themselves yet another time this week, I can only think of one thing. This serves as a protection for the interim President Woodruff as the presidential search is supposed to be coming to an end. Woodruff, whose appointment as a provost was deemed a disappointment by the president of MSU's Black Faculty, Staff, and Administration Association. Woodruff, one who was criticized by Northwestern students of color for ignoring their concerns. Woodruff, who is yet to make a statement directly renouncing racial violence, which we asked her all summer to do. We are yet to speak with her in BSA in an individual meeting. How does keeping her as president reflect the values of racial equity in 2030? This is nothing but a diversion. By removing a fierce advocate for black equity, you guys are doing the opposite of protecting black students on this campus. How about you guys address the racial violence that's going on this campus? Putting Hitler on the jumbotron, addressing our walkout for which we had a town hall yesterday. Only two trustee members showed up. Rima was one of them. Let's address the sexual assault allegations that you continue to traumatize these women through year in and year out. I call for the board to prioritize these pending incidents rather than attack and attempt to put Rima as the scapegoat of this board's accreditation being jeopardized. Stop settling for mediocrity. I stand with Dr. Rima and I demand better from the board. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll next hear from Mike Balo, followed by Sonia Mays. Mike.
Well, hell yes. I need everyone to take a deep breath and think about what's really going on here. Who has an interest in the board chair resigning? Who has been at the center of all the MSU controversy over the last decade? Like going rogue with the media during the Stanley resignation? Diane Byram. How in the world could former Governor Jim Blanchard and U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow immediately call for the resignation of our sitting board chair with no due process and only allegations from one other trustee to go on? Could it be that one current board member is the personal friend of each and was able to call in favors last week? Diane Byram, which sitting trustee has been steadfast in her opposition to releasing 6,000 documents that two different Michigan attorneys general have called for? Diane Byram. Who desperately wants to gain proxy control of this board chair seat again to control the hiring of the next MSU president and to ensure that those documents never see the light of day? Diane Byram. Isn't it interesting that the immediate chorus of calls for resignation came from the Byram-Lansing insider crew? Let's take a roll call. Melanie Foster, Joel Ferguson, Diane Byram. The Lansing insider crew is beside themselves as someone that they can't control as the chairperson who is trying to bring long-needed transparency to this board, something that will threaten their reputation even if it finally gives justice to the survivors. Where is the faculty senate? They too have joined the chorus of the kangaroo court. No due process here, just immediate calls for resignation based on some shaky allegations. They've abandoned the trust of the majority of our good faculty, just like Dr. Woodruff abandoned the truth regarding Dean Gupta, the MSU swim team, Title IX, and her duty to the survivors. This smells like a planned, orchestrated hit job with the motive of controlling the presidential hire and the continued blockage of justice for the survivors. Let's look at just a couple of these misdeeds that were contained in Trustee Scott's letter. One, that Trustee Vassar was communicating with the AG on fulfilling the AG's request to release the documents. And two, that she fought for transparency by releasing the Quinn Emanuel report. Excuse me, those are charges? For the first time in memory, a board chair was fulfilling their constitutional duty. MSU obviously has the governor's attention now, so I asked the governor to get involved and compel the release of the 6,000 documents and do the investigation. Find out who knew what and when. The governor can call for this immediately. Of course, give due process to all in the investigation, including all current and past trustees. Then we'll really see who needs to step down from the board. Look deeper here. Ladies and gentlemen, look deeper. Everything here is related. See the truth for what it is. The Byram legacy will be one of deflection, deception, and destruction. Turn away from it toward the light. If you want to get rid of a trustee, just make sure it's the right one.
Thank you very much, Mike. Our next speaker will be Sonia Mays, followed by Christopher Raymond. Sonia, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm here today in support of Dr. Rima Vassar and her leadership of this esteemed body. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sonia Mays, and I am the CEO of Develop Detroit and an elected Board of Education member of Detroit's public school system. It was through my own education leadership work that I first met Dr. Vassar. Over the past few years, she has proactively engaged me with information and perspective on ways to improve public education outcomes in Detroit. As I got to know her, I found that Dr. Vassar is deeply passionate about education. We've already heard that she's brilliant. She also consistently presented as someone who demanded that the needs of underserved students be urgently addressed by leadership. She pushed me to be a better leader. She is a change agent and is unafraid to push and fight against the status quo toward a more fair and equitable outcome. And she is brave in her fight for racial justice in academia. It takes an audacious person to stand within a decades-old institution and to demand and push for accountability. Change is not easy, and change can make entrenched stakeholders deeply uncomfortable. But for people and institutions in need of leadership, of new leadership and improvement, change agents are often necessary, and their boldness is essential. I urge this body to reflect on why it elected Dr. Vassar as its chair 10 months ago. I call on this body for objectivity in how it moves forward. I implore this body to cast aside the further politicizing of its leadership, to cast off media rumor mongering and some of the racially coded character assassinations that I have heard. I implore you to focus on fact finding, and I challenge this body to recognize that change is necessary for MSU and to recognize that this necessary change will leave some uncomfortable and many embarrassed. I ask these things because so much more than Dr. Vassar's tenure as chair is at stake. I am not an MSU graduate. In fact, I'm a University of Michigan graduate. But despite our friendly rivalry, I take no satisfaction whatsoever in what Michigan State has gone through the last few years, none. As a taxpayer and as an education policy advocate, I'm frustrated to have watched this university, this great university, lurch from crisis to crisis. The state of Michigan is in a hyper-competitive race for talent, jobs, and residents. As a state, we're losing ground. And getting back to greatness here is what is required. It's going to require consistent and focused leadership of this body. Stay relentlessly focused on the big picture. Please continue to take steps to identify systemic issues. Continue to prioritize transparency and restoring public trust. Thank you.
Thank you. Sonia, thank you. We'll next hear from Christopher Raymond, appearing via Zoom, and then Alec McCree, also appearing via Zoom.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me okay?
Christopher, we can. Good morning.
Great, thank you. Thanks for allowing me to speak with you today. My name is Chris Raymond. I'm a 1988 graduate of the Broad College. Since matriculating to MSU almost 40 years ago, I've loved this institution. I've made regular and significant donations for the past decade or so and have served on the advisory board of the Financial Markets Institute, which is part of the Broad College, dedicating my time and expertise, while at the same time, through my role as a senior leader at a number of financial institutions in Chicago, I've hired or helped with the placement of a lot of scholars from that elite program. My daughter currently attends this fine institution, and I could not be more proud of that. I come before you today to urge you to do what we know has already been urged by many dismayed alumni like myself, and that's to take action now to reinstate Dean Gupta to his role as the Dean of the Broad College. I've known Dean Gupta for some time now, and his track record of stewardship of the Broad College speaks for itself. The reputation of the Broad College and Broad graduates, at least in the circles in which I travel, has grown immensely over his tenure. So I won't rehash all the events of Dean Gupta's case, as they are pretty well known, but in that 100-plus page Quinn Emanuel document commissioned by you, funded by you, and submitted to this board over 7 months ago, the conclusion and the correct course of action couldn't be more clear. I'll just take one quote. The personnel actions taken against Gupta appear disproportionate, out of sequence with the underlying investigation, and based on a factual record that includes errors and omissions of relevant information and context. And while I'm quoting, I found a comment made by Governor Whitmer earlier this week to be particularly poignant. Quote, "We deserve leaders who will act with integrity and make sure the institution is a lot more important than any one person's aspirations, viewpoints, or agenda." Bravo, Governor. I could not agree more. Now, I understand this board has a lot on its plate with all that's come up since Dean Gupta's case, but that does not diminish your duty to address both his case and the clear lack of institutional control that allowed this situation to happen in the first place. Our university our beloved university, is floundering due to lack of leadership. From my direct experience and from the success that the Broad College has enjoyed, Dean Gupta brings that very attribute to his role. Folks, people are watching. Do the right thing here. If not for the benefit of the Broad College, do it for the benefit of the university, as any top talent target for any role is going to want assurances that his or her employment will be handled with integrity, transparency, and honor. Reinstate Dean Gupta now and begin the process of restoring the trust, honor, and integrity for which true Spartans are so well known. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Much appreciated. Our next speaker is Alec McCree, followed by Devin Woodruff. Alec, I think you're joining us via Zoom. Can you hear us?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
We can indeed. Please proceed, Alec.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. Dear Board of Trustees, my name is Alec McCree, and I've been a Spartan for over 36 years. I have served on multiple boards at the business school and the MSU Foundation Board for 14 years. I am also a proud parent of an MSU sophomore, and over the past 14 months, I have written and spoken to the board several times about their fiduciary responsibilities and that of Michigan State University Administration to provide Dean Sanjay Gupta his due and fair process. The board alumni are dumbfounded by not only the wrongful dismissal of Dean Gupta, but by the lack of any correction to his wrongful dismissal by then Provost Woodruff. The Broad alumni question the willingness of this board to continue to allow the disparagement of our great business school dean, who led the largest school at MSU with record alumni involvement and amazingly had seven of the top academic programs by rankings at MSU. I was deeply hurt last week when I was on campus meeting with students at the business school. Students I spoke with still think Dean Gupta sexually assaulted someone because of the email they read from President Stanley and Provost Woodruff. This isn't the first time I've heard this. I heard it last fall from alumni who met with then Provost Woodruff and her staff. It wasn't until I forwarded them the Quinn Emanuel report did they see the truth. This university, the current administration, and the Broad College of Business still has not set the record straight. There was never a follow-up email after the Quinn Emanuel report came out stating the facts. There has never been a public apology to Dean Gupta and his family. This makes Broad alumni so disappointed in MSU because they know Dean Gupta is a great leader and a person of the highest integrity, which is more than I can say for the current administration, which has brought countless scandals and costly lawsuits to our university. I find it incredulous that the university has not settled the Dean Gupta matter when the facts are so clear. But I guess that is what happens when you ask those who committed the wrongful dismissal to fix it. True leaders admit when they are wrong. I'm asking again, let's do what is the best for the Broad School, the Broad students, and the university and reinstate Dean Gupta. And to the Broad member, or to the board members, former board members, who are arguing to suppress transparency, Byram, Scott, Foster, Ferguson, what are you trying to hide? Without Quinn Emanuel report being released, we wouldn't have known that President Woodruff and certain staff members lied, omitted relevant information and content, interfered in an OIE investigation as against MSU agreement and Department of Justice. The only people who actively fight against transparency are those who have things to hide. So thank you to Dr. Vassar and the other board members for fighting for the release of the Quinn Emanuel report and increased transparency. Now it's time for this board to release the NASA papers so that the victims, their families, and the entire MSU community can finish healing. I asked Diane Byram and Brian Quinn, why are you so afraid to release these papers? This has been the trend with other issues at MSU for far too long. Why do certain board members and certain administrators want to hide the facts? Maybe it's time for the governor to look at the practice of transparency at MSU and remove those board members who don't believe in it and those who do not. It is time for you to go, Diane Byram.
Thank you very much. The next speaker will be Devin Woodruff, followed by Andrew Horde. Devin, are you with us? Good morning, Devin.
Good morning. Good evening, board members, faculty, staff.
Before driving into my address, I'd like to take a moment to recognize and express the collective gratitude that Black Student Alliance we have for Dr. Reamer Vassar, for her unwavering support and leadership and dedication as our chair, her commitment to fostering an environment for respect and inclusivity, and understanding that inspiration to all of us serves as a foundation for change. She's someone that just displays love in her interaction with students as no other in terms of with trustees. But our campus is at a melting pot of cultures, background, beliefs, and dreams. It is the diversity that enriches our experiences, broadens our horizons, and fuels and shares our vision for progress. However, as we gather here today, there are shadows of intolerance, prejudice, and hatred. Nonviolent hate crimes are lacking in physical aggression. They carry a weight of emotion and psychological harm that deeply scare individuals and scare and fracture our community. However, recent stats paint a troubling picture. In this past academic year alone, we have witnessed a 15% increase in nonviolent hate crimes on campus. This isn't just a number that are for students, but are for peers. These ramifications go beyond an individual. They affect us collectively, sowing mistrust and discomfort. In the past decade, based upon enrollment, the racial equity of Black students have been nothing but disappointment. There's a reason for that. We don't feel safe. Based on enrollment of this year, it is the highest it's been since 2015. We have the most diverse student body we have ever had, but this has not applied to Black students. Based on the entering class, Black students have stayed stagnant over the last decade, while over race has stayed stagnantly increased. Thus, I propose to you all to work with Black Student Alliance on creating a no hate crime, no violence accountability on campus ordinance. The objective of this ordinance is simple but profound: to ensure every member of our community feels safe, respected, and free from any form of hatred and prejudice by implementing a clear reporting mechanism, because the university right now does not have a mechanism for if a student is found of discrimination, transparent investigation, and fair repercussions for sending a clear message that hate has no place here. I understand that freedom of speech is the right we all cherish, but there is a stark difference between expressing one opinions and weaponizing words to harm is based on race, gender, religion, and protected characteristics. This ordinance is not about silencing voices, but it's about amplifying the voices of love, unity, and respect to those who are hated. Esteemed board members, history has taught us that inaction can lead to consequences. As custodians of this institution, we have the power and the duty to enact change, to send a clear message to our community. In conclusion, let our legacy not be one of complacency, but of courage to challenge the status quo and to confront hatred head on. I urge the Board of Trustees to work with student leaders and the Black Student Alliance on crafting a no hate, no crime violence accountability on campus ordinance, and in doing so, taking a definitive action and stand against hate. Thank you for your time.
Gavin, thank you very much. We'll next hear from Andrew Horde, followed by Joe Kovach. Andrew?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Interim President and trustees, thank you very much for your time this morning. I'll be very quick with this. Joran Vandersloot came out recently in talking about the death of Natalie Holloway. That was 18 years. And seriously, in all that time, the parents of Natalie Holloway came out and made it clear what happened to that death. These survivors need to understand what happened with regards to the Nassar situation. The same thing, we need to know what happened with the Mel Tucker situation. This has now put yet another black stain on this institution. We cannot tolerate that anymore. And I hate having to answer that in front of all my friends, especially my U of M friends. So please, let's do the right thing. Let's release the papers. Let's get to the bottom of all those situations. Thank you very much.
Very much. We'll next hear from Joe Kovach, followed by Tom Munley via Zoom.
Good morning. I'm Joe Kovach, and I'm a recent alum. And I don't want to be here. I live 500 miles away. But this is embarrassing, quite frankly. Seeing the university in the news about sexual misconduct again is reprehensible. Trustees once again releasing individual statements to the news to get on the front page for a scandal is embarrassing. Our governor having to answer to questions about changing the state constitution to take the vote away from citizens and make your position appointed because of the absolute dysfunction of this board is extremely embarrassing. The entire community, alumni, students, staff, and faculty are deeply embarrassed of this university that we love so deeply. Every week we are in a new headline. Every week our degrees feel worth less and less. There was a reason the entire community had no confidence in you last year, and I'm extremely disappointed in this board because it appears that nothing has changed again, and I'm up here again asking you to work together again. Get it together, because this has never, ever been about you as individuals. This is about Spartans, and we deserve better. Start taking public votes. Start making choices for us instead of to protect yourselves or for your own interests. Release the 6,000 documents and learn how to function as a public board of trustees that we can trust, or just resign already. Thank you.
We're next going to hear from Tom Munley via Zoom and then Kayla Williams via Zoom. So I just want to sort of go down the order of the speakers list, and then with the capacity issues, we'll come, you know, we'll come back.
I just wanted to say that I'm speaking for Enid Warren Moore. She wasn't able to get in on the Zoom.
So we'll, again, I want to kind of go down the list, and then we will come back. Thank you very much. Tom Munley. Tom, are you with us? Tom, are you with us? Okay, we will.
He's having a technical difficulty because he just texted me, so make sure you give it a shot.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep.
Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Many of you know me as one of the leaders of the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive, although I am here to address the board on a matter that I consider far more important than the reinstatement of swimming and diving, and that's board integrity. Trustee Scott, your recent letter, which makes several allegations against Dr. Rima and calls for her to resign, is hypocrisy at its finest. The irony of the fact that you didn't even follow the procedure outlined by the board for such allegations while criticizing Dr. Rima for not following board policies only adds to the absurdity of your action. But let me start with one of the more salacious allegations, that Dr. Rima's ride on a donor's private jet might result in some undue influence is laughable, especially in comparison to a trustee who has invested in real estate with a partner. I wonder, Trustee Scott, when it comes to the building at 880 First Street, which you bought with former trustee Joel Ferguson, how much undue influence does he have over you? Does Joel Ferguson have enough undue influence to get you to change your mind on standing up for the survivors and releasing the emails? Does he have enough undue influence on you to get you to vote on the modifications to the trustee emeriti policies in September of 2021, which still allowed him to personally benefit? When the 880 First Street property requires money, does he actually make a capital call to you? If not, does that curry good favor with you to take the actions he wants to see, even though he is no longer on the board? I do wonder how much capital it has taken to sustain a project announced roughly 4 years ago, but still isn't leasing units as far as I can tell. But let's move on and talk about name, image, and likeness. No, I'm not talking about athletics. I'm talking about your name. Isn't using your name on the website 880firststreet.com not following the exact same thing you criticized Dr. Rima for? The board should be consistent with its application of the rules. Your name, her image, seems the same, except you actually have a financial interest in that property. Lastly, did you use your position as trustee or any of the relationships you built as a result of being a trustee to secure the portion of the $6 million in state revitalization and placemaking grants which were awarded by the City of Muskegon to the 880 First Street project in September of 2022? Because doing so would not only have benefited you personally, but also Joel Ferguson. All of this leads me to call for Trustee Dan Kelly to open an investigation into the extent to which you are influenced by Joel Ferguson. Let me move on to a different call to action related to a more troubling board member behavior by former Chair Diane Byram. The board should call for the immediate resignation of Diane Byram from the board. Her admission that she claimed principal residence exemptions for her two homes is a criminal act. The Michigan Department of Treasury principal residence exemption affidavit contains the following statement. I certify under penalty of perjury that I own and occupy as a principal residence on the date stated in line 11, yada, 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 and that all the information contained on this document is true and correct to the best of my knowledge. The penalty for perjury in Michigan is 15 years. You admitted you had two residences where you claimed the PRE. Thus, you have admitted you perjured yourself when you and your husband completed the PRE affidavit for your Lake Michigan house. This is not a paperwork issue. This is a criminal act. Any cleansing of the board should begin with Diane Byram. Anyone who's perjured themselves for their own financial benefit at the expense of fellow taxpayers should not serve on the board of a public university. Lastly, President Woodruff, I hope to see your name on the ballot next year. Your dealings with our group has proven that you're an excellent politician. All talk, no promises, and no real action. Telling us to go out and raise what would have been the third largest gift in MSU history, which became impossible with the Mel Tucker situation, makes me chagrined. On a brighter note, I'd like to thank Trustees Deno, Kelly, and Vassar for their continued measured leadership. You give us hope that all is not lost. And to Dr. Rima, keep fighting. Don't let the Byron Lansing cabal force you out. Release the emails, reinstate Dean Gupta, reinstate Swim and Dive. Just do the right things. It doesn't have to be this hard. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll next hear from Kayla Williams via Zoom, and then James Thurston also appearing via Zoom. Kayla, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can. Good morning.
Perfect. Good morning. My name is Kayla Williams, and I'm here on the third anniversary of the cut of the Swim and Dive programs to talk to you about the future of collegiate Olympic sports. For those of you keeping score, this is the 21st consecutive Board of Trustees meeting that the Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive has had speakers for. Admittedly, the diversity of speakers has narrowed, as this has become a far more politically charged issue than I could have ever imagined, but here we are. My overall message today is one of concern for the future of Olympic sports, but I must include a discussion of the swim and dive cuts as the most recent and relevant cause for concern in this matter. Why am I here? Why am I still fighting, right? I am here because I believe these opportunities provide more benefit to students than many of you can even know. It's no secret that football and basketball are the only two sports that generate any real revenue beyond tuition dollars non-scholar athletes pay. I understand how business works and that even in nonprofits like this university, revenue generation for reinvestment will be prioritized. At the rate things are changing in college athletics today, however, I have very real fears that the advancement of revenue generation will very quickly come at the expense of Olympic sports opportunities. Title IX can only help so much when it comes to protecting these valuable opportunities, and if left unchecked, will result in opportunities being handed out haphazardly on the sidewalks of Shaw Lane, like the time the women's rowing team approached me and other random passersby about joining their team while I was in school. President Woodruff, our dialogue started out so promising. What happened? After former Trustee Foster declared that there was no path forward for reinstatement, we were so grateful for your willingness to engage with us mere weeks later on a phone call to dispel the inaccuracies that led to that statement. You had spoken with the student athletes at this point and communicated to them the need for $6.5 million in operating expense to go half and half with the athletic department to facilitate a return of the programs over a five-year period. This seemed reasonable. Fast forward to an in-person meeting in June, and suddenly the ask had increased to $20 million to support facility improvements for the Health and Wellness Center. I personally raised concerns regarding this 3.5-month timeline ahead of us to achieve a 4x increase in the initial ask, and in your optimism, you said that you believed we could do this. When we all understandably did not meet this target, you invited yourself to a working session we had scheduled with another university unit to tell us that since we did not meet the funding target, reinstatement was not an option at this time due to scheduling challenges with a shared facility. I hope the analysis I sent you and the board using MSU's own facility use data has disabused you of that notion. If you missed it, I'm happy to send the data again. You have some very consistent and persistent groups that keep showing up at these meetings. I would hope I am not the one to advise you all that in any effective communication strategy involves getting out in front of a story and controlling the narrative. It appears some of these issues have gotten away from you. To those of you in positions of power at the front of the room today, what was it that spurred you to take action and caused you to run for these positions in the first place? Why are you here, and what did you hope to accomplish? Have you achieved what you set out to achieve? Public participation at this point indicates concerns on behalf of the public for where MSU is headed, and what will you do to correct course? Thank you.
Thank you, Kayla. We'll next hear from James Thurston, appearing via Zoom, and then Mindy Arbaugh. James, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can indeed. Please proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to participate remotely. In 2023, we have had collaborative conversations about the Swim and Dive program. In fact, we were in the midst of a very collaborative discussion, as Kayla mentioned, before that meeting was interrupted by President Woodruff, who was not invited to that meeting. Ms. Woodruff mentioned to us in December 2022 about basing decisions upon data. To that end, I have provided you with a pro forma budget for the reinstatement of the program based entirely upon Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, NCAA FRS data, with the only inputs being MSU's own tuition and room and board costs. As we have said before, the program would indeed be profitable to the university. Over the next 30 years, at 60% in-state participation and $11 million total profit, at the more likely 40% in-state participation, a $33 million profit over that period. No program, no ability to offset the general student population costs of the new facility, like the grad students who spoke today. No, we are not taking spots from other students, as your own data at the last board meeting showed an increased attendance of 3,000 students over the last 4 years. Once again, Mr. Beekman was wrong. In my own personal discussions with Advancement, my interests in the universities are aligned. I am willing to make an irrevocable bequest pledge in the millions that I've previously discussed here with you. However, for some reason, these do not count in the eyes of Ms. Woodruff, but asking us for one of the largest cash donations in school history is apparently okay. I have also provided to you in my submission the photo shared on MSU's Facebook page announcing the 2023-2024 rowing team, which shows roughly 75 rowers. Now, is it possible that these figures for last year provided to the Gender Equity and Review Director were 94 rowers? Maybe, but the more likely answer is that those figures were manipulated since the NCAA women's rowing average is only 54 athletes. To my chagrin, it's incredibly disappointing that the nature of the GERD meetings were dubiously labeled internally as diversity, equity, inclusion efforts and not what they really were. What is clear is that Jen Smith and Alexis Bresky will definitely have some explaining to do if, and likely when, this year's rowing participation figures miraculously show up in the 90s. These are the facts, and they're incontrovertible. We look forward to discussing these matters with the new president, as Ms. Woodruff has pulled her name out of the race. We have an Olympic-caliber coach, National Coaching Association support, a budget, and a pool that can be funded in part if Mr. Howell or Mr. Gore are allowed or encouraged to get in a room together. All we need is three letters, yes. Mr. Denno, as chair of the search committee, we have no doubt that you will help MSU select a collaborative president willing to advocate for change. Finally, Mr. Kelly, Mr. Denno, Ms. Pierce, in your tenures, you have all seemed to exude professionalism, calmness, and patience that many would be wise to learn from you all, in particular, Dr. Jack Burton and the rest of the MSU faculty senate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, James. We'll next hear from Mindy Arbaugh, followed by James Phelan, both appearing via Zoom. Mindy, can you hear us?
Good morning, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Spartans. It's a tiny bit surreal and a whole lot frustrating, as I'm sure some of you would agree, that the battle for Spartan Swim and Dive representatives are still here, more than 3 years after our program was cut. I plan to use my 3 minutes this morning to address, well, most of you sitting on that side of the table, to review the substantial progress our group has made, raising millions of dollars, securing swim consultants and pool experts, and collaborating with MSU officials to figure out how to use our funds and expertise and bring back the 99-year-old swim and dive program. But it's become clear of late that there is a leadership void on your side of the table. So I'm not going to waste my comments on those of you who hold your personal grudges and political hierarchy above the needs of the MSU community, who make empty promises in exchange for endorsements and temporary peace, all while circling the wagons around the Michigan State Old Guard to protect your positions in power. We are also chagrined, President Woodruff. Instead, I want to address the future of Michigan State. Our university's next president is likely tuned into this meeting, as are the individuals ready to run for the Board of Trustees. To quote a classic film about making hard choices for the greater good, future MSU leaders, you are our only hope. Needless to say, you have a lot to catch up on. The last decade here has been an example of how not to run a university. Yet beyond the series of horrible decisions, systemic obstruction, and blatant deception, there is a solid foundation here in East Lansing. In a quick scan of the Michigan State mission statement, you'll see words like solution, engagement, transform, and innovative, which actually appears twice in the mission statement. Our founders valued innovation because they understood that a truly outstanding university must continue to grow and improve, to solve problems instead of sweeping them aside, create opportunities instead of closing doors, face difficult situations instead of hiding behind lawyers. The foundation upon which our beloved school was built is strong. It has withstood many sins of the past and present, and I remain hopeful that you, future leaders, will break down the walls erected by your predecessors, let in the light, and rebuild Michigan State one value at a time. solve these problems, transform student lives, engage with the innovators, and return MSU to the echelon of excellence from whence it was born. It's a daunting challenge, no doubt, but there's a saying here that has carried us through some pretty tough stuff. Spartans will. And we know you, the future leaders of MSU, will see the passion and promise on our side of the table and will work with us to rebuild and re-engage the many who have turned away from Michigan State because of your predecessor's actions and inaction. You, future leaders, have our resources, our partnership, and our support. And together we can resurrect not only a varsity program, but an entire university. Go Grid!
Thank you very much, Mindy. We'll next hear from James Phelan, followed by Sobar Saeed. James, can you hear us?
Yes, good morning. I can hear you.
Fantastic. Please go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Jim Phelan. I'm the parent of an alum, a former swimmer. She'd been at MSU only two months when Mr. Beekman cut the program. She graduated last May. That's how long we've been at this. You might think that her graduation would end my participation in the effort to reinstate Spartan Swim and Dive. But no. I addressed this group about a year and a half ago, explaining how I was taken with the notion of Spartans Will, which I first heard during a tour for prospective students. Professor Woodruff, you recently emailed us a new MSU ad that featured Spartans who are making a difference in the lives of others. I'm here this morning to let you know that you've just heard from Spartans who are making a difference in the lives of others. Your alums, those who spoke before me, have worked tirelessly for the last 3 years to reinstate the varsity swim and dive team that was so important to them because they know varsity swim and dive is so important to so many. You can find these alums on a video call most Tuesday nights at 8 p.m., a schedule they've kept for the past 3 years. As you've heard from your own alums, our experience with President Woodruff does not reflect the cooperative collaboration that is a supposed hallmark of Spartan's Will. We were an unreasonable fundraising goal and a tight deadline. President Woodruff describes this process in an email to us as the collaborative manner in which we work together toward the goal of restoring the swim and dive program, but sadly, her words do not make it so. I'm here this morning, as I've been at every board meeting since Mr. Beekman's decision, either in person or watching on Zoom, to let you all know that we'll keep working toward the goal of reinstating varsity swim and dive. You need to know who you're dealing with. Swimmers are swimming back and forth, staring at a line at the bottom of a pool in pursuit of small time improvements over a season. Swim parents take their kids to practice before dawn and sit through 3 hour swim meets to watch an event lasting less than a minute. In short, we're committed, we're patient, and we know that goals are achieved through persistent effort over the long haul. I was excited to learn early this week that the search for a new president is entering the final stages. We look forward to working with that person as we continue on our effort. Before concluding, I would be remiss in not addressing the bravery of the sister survivors who continue to address this board. Please listen to them. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Much appreciated. We'll next hear from Soba Saeed, followed by Shahed Altai. Saba, are you here with us? Soba, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Before I get started with introducing myself or anything like that, I would like to comment on what I witnessed here today and what I observed. And it actually baffles me. I came here to speak about how my community is lacking equity, but I noticed that basically every single minority group on campus is lacking that same equity. We don't want another letter sent by your assistant saying we're working on it. No more conversations. Conversations are just meant to stall. Actions always speak louder than words. And thank you. And from what I'm seeing today is MSU yet again trying to find a scapegoat to hide from all the things going on in the media addressing them. And what I've seen from what students spoke is that they are telling you that A person on this board is the only person that's ever stood up for them, that's ever fought for them, and that's ever called out the lack of equity that they are facing, and they are the only one that is being under heat right now. I do not know anything that is going on, but based on what people said here today and what I am hearing, that is the conclusion that I came to. Because I hear what my fellow students say. I listen to their concerns, unlike many of you here. Again, lack of equity does not go for students. Actually, it is on the Board of Trustees, holding different members to different standards. That is something. Also, you do not get to decide whether those documents are released or not. They are not about you. They are about people here who came to talk about their trauma year and year again. How long are you going to deny them that? What are you hiding? If there is a reason, say it. Don't just say you cannot. Don't vote against it. Let the students vote against it if you care about our voices and if you're encouraging us to have that conversation. Again, my time is almost up, but I will continue because I didn't even get to comment on what I have to say because of how messed up things are and how badly you've done as a job to carry this university. I'm extremely disappointed. I am not proud to be a Spartan. I am not proud to go to the school, and if I could, I would not. Again, I am addressing my concerns now because my name is Saba Saad. I'm a Palestinian, and I said Palestinian, and I condemn Hamas, as we said over and over and over and over again. Gaza is facing a genocide. We are all watching a genocide. And by the way, if you want to argue genocide with me, the definition is the deliberate killing of a large number of people from a particular nation or ethnic group with the aim of destroying that nation or group. That is a genocide. Whether you agree politically, not politically, religiously, that does not matter when you are seeing children dying. Children bombed. Children knowing when they're asked and interviewed, what are your dreams to be when you're older? They say, kids in Gaza don't get to grow up. Shame on you. And shame on you, President, for coming to our vigil that was in honor of a six-year-old boy that was stabbed 26 times. 26. Six-year-old as he went to give his landlord a hug. And you stayed for 5 minutes. You didn't send an email. And actually, let me hold you. Actually, my favorite thing to do is ask what you said, I'll use it. In the email, in the statement that the university released about Israel and Hamas, you did not first say Palestine. You did not differentiate the Palestinian struggle from the ongoing, well, not the ongoing, from what Hamas and the Israeli government are facing. That is not what we're here to do. You didn't differentiate. You grouped your Palestinian student, which consists of Muslims, Christians, and Jews, into a category under Hamas that has opened us to a widespread of Islamophobia to those who are not even Muslim. It took us 9 hours to pass a bill advocating for resources addressing anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, while still recognizing the Palestinian struggle and being respectful towards those of the Jewish community, even those Israeli citizens. Because critiquing a government and a military force is nothing wrong, and we've done it for year after year. And shame on you for not addressing it and leaving it up to your OOTP to be there for 9 hours listening to gruesome details about violence, rape, murder, all of that. They are getting the backlash. They're the ones receiving the threats. And it's because you couldn't stand up and say something. You do not acknowledge Palestinian students. In the statement that was released by the university, it actually condemns all violence and innocence of killing of innocent, the killing of innocent people. But that was only meant for the October 7th attack, and you did mention people in Gaza, yes? No.
Your remarks, because we are running quite a bit over the three minutes. So I'm just asking if you could conclude your remarks.
I'm almost
please.
Done.
Please. Thank you.
In the statement, you condemn the killing of all innocents. Innocent people are still being killed. Why are you not addressing that? Why are you not addressing that? Because to me, as I'm reading this and I've seen your actions, I see that you only condemned the innocent of all civilian loss when it was Israelis. That tells me how you see us as in the university as Palestinians. You do not even get to say, you don't say the word Palestinian. You never sent us an email of condolences, never showed up to anything, never having even an assistant or a fake letter of condolences being like, how is your community doing? It is not up to our students to advocate, study, do our work, get jobs and all that. You have to do some part too, I mean, as president and all. You do. And this is not only affecting us mentally as we are talking and looking at the news, it's affecting our academic journey. I have missed classes, exams, to meetings, to explain to people, to give them the resources that you lack to give. And sorry, one last sentence and I'll be done.
One sentence and then we'll
be Okay. I'll be done.
Thank you.
The resources that you lack to give, you have to do better because this is affecting our academic journey. And based on what happens here, I am assuming the university will be going under some type of investigation or something of that sort. And you do not want the academic journey to be involved in that because I know that could affect the university status on giving credentials and the university status as well. Thank you.
Here from Shahed Altai, followed by Yusuf Abbas. Shahed, good morning.
Shahed can't be here today. My name is Alisa. I'll be speaking on her behalf, and I just want to preface by saying this is just coming from me as a student and not in association with any other jobs or positions I might hold.
Do you have a statement from Shahed yet?
Yeah.
Is it a statement from that individual?
Yes, it is.
Please proceed. Please keep within 3 minutes.
Okay, I would like to have some of my time back, though, for answering those questions. As an Arab... Okay, as an Arab and Muslim woman, I just want to say I am so tired. My community and I are so tired. We keep seeing our people getting bombed and murdered abroad. There is an ongoing genocide against our community, and no one has even tried to make sure that we feel safe. No one's tried to make sure that we feel comfortable or like we belong. We've been the ones reaching out. We've been the ones to take the first step that administration should have taken years ago. The Palestinian genocide is not new. The ongoing apartheid is not new. The erasure of Arab students on this campus is not new. We have gotten death threats. We've been stalked. We've had our jobs threatened. We've been called terrorists. All this, not just by other students, but by faculty, staff, parents, and alumni. There is no other way to describe this besides racist, Islamophobic, and xenophobic. I ask you, why must we put our own grief and pain aside in order to beg for humanity? Why must we constantly have to beg others to recognize our personhood and rights to exist? We're disappointed in this university. We have no confidence that this university has our best interests in mind. We stand with every single person here on this campus and around the world fighting for justice. So we will not be silent, not now or ever, even when the university puts us down. We were horrified by the image of Hitler that was put up at the last game. It was shameful, and the university should be held accountable. And we all unequivocally condemn the disgusting situation and any other hate our Jewish peers are experiencing. There is no intention to diminish anyone else's thoughts, feelings, and histories, but this needs to be reciprocated. The university needs to be held accountable when the rhetoric it uses erases Palestinian memory, history, and struggle. Why did the university fail to use the word Palestine in its original statement? Why did members of the administration present here use the phrase, light must push out darkness? Many of us found that line in all its shortness reminiscent of a now-deleted tweet by the Prime Minister of Israel that states, this is a struggle between the children of light and the children of darkness, between humanity and the law of the jungle. I ask all of you, am I the child of darkness? Are we the children of darkness? Are we these animals of the jungle? And are we the ones that are getting pushed out to make room for the light? Because if that's the goal, trust us, it's been achieved, and we are not proud to be Spartans. We are not proud that no one is speaking for our issues, not even anyone today besides the members of our own community, because these ongoing struggles are not new. We deserve protection, too. We deserve to be acknowledged and to be treated with respect, and the university must act on all the issues brought forth today and the ones that will continue to come forth. The university must acknowledge the existence of out-of students on campus rather than erasing our identities by calling us white. Our struggles are real, we're here, and we're not going anywhere. Do your job, especially those of you on the board that identify as out-of. God forbid one of your students get murdered in a hate crime or kills themselves due to harassment and bullying. It's happened around the country and on college campuses. Even my own sister's school has been on lockdown because of the threats they've gotten for standing with Palestine. We must act now, taking action to prevent further words and acts of hate on our campus rather than following the MSU trend of reacting after travesty hits. This board, administration, and the university's plethora of failures are more than disappointing, but at the same time, never surprising. Do your jobs, resign, and we are not proud to be Spartans. Please do your jobs. That's it. Thank you.
Our next speaker will be Yusuf Abbas. Yusuf, are you here?
Yes.
Good morning.
Hello, members of the Board of Trustees. First, I would like to say the terrorist attack of October 7th and the following war has seen innocent people endure horrific acts of violence. I wish to condemn violence as a means of conflict. As a student of Palestinian descent, I believe this conflict can be resolved with open dialogue between Israelis and Palestinians. I believe that a lasting peace that seeks justice, understanding, and security is possible. However, I am concerned that this open dialogue will not be seen given events over the last few weeks. In Europe, as well as multiple American states, voices of Palestinians and those who support Palestinians have seen an infringement of our civil liberties. People have been harassed, doxxed, and threatened for standing against injustice. People in my community have grown fearful that we are being silenced and that speaking for Palestinians is to risk your career and your safety. Next, I would like to highlight the experience of my family, who are Arab citizens of Israel. The government of Israel over the last few years has acted in a more authoritarian, anti-democratic manner, impacting Palestinians and Israelis. The current government of Israel features not one Arab cabinet member in a country that has 21% Arab population. Cabinet ministers such as Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir are known even in Israel for their racist views towards Palestinians. Laws such as the nation-state and admission committee bills have only reinforced the decades of discrimination and systemic inequality the Arabs face in Israel. The nation-state law was passed by the government, a law that has been used to enforce a separation of people. Quoting a newspaper from Israel, the Times of Israel, a judge presiding over a lawsuit challenging the law said, "The development of Jewish settlement is therefore a national value, one anchored in a basic law. It ought to be an appropriate and dominant consideration in the array of municipal considerations, including for the issue of establishing schools and funding transportation." All of this demonstrates a simple fact of life for Palestinians in Israel. Arabs are essentially second-class citizens in their own native homeland, discriminated against in a manner that is reminiscent of the Jim Crow era. I implore this university to act. Take a stance to protect and recognize the rights of its Palestinian students. I also urge this university to acknowledge the plight of the Palestinian people. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Yusuf. We will, as I stated earlier, go back just to see if there are other speakers who have since arrived. So I will quickly do this. And I would do it in order, so thank you. Dr. Christy Poitra. Nathan Fettis, Candace Montgomery, Javon Simmons, and Enid Warren Moore. So, thank you. Thank you. And please, could you state your name for the?
Okay. Good morning. My name is Tracy D. Jefferson, and I'm speaking in place of Enid Warren Moore. Good morning, Chairperson Vassar, Michigan State University Board of Trustees, and the audience here this morning. Thank you for allowing me to address the board this morning as not only a concerned constituent,
but as a concerned sister, friend, and soror and supporter of Chairperson Dr. Rima Vassar. Before I begin, I'd like to make it clear that I am a Bronco, but I stand here in support of the Spartans. I stand in support of what is right, what is just, what is good, and so does Dr. Rima Vassar. I was disturbed after reading the article published on October 22nd, where another trustee, also one of our sorority sisters, is calling for the removal of Chairperson Vassar. The article accused Dr. Vassar of bullying and plotting. I have personally known Dr. Vassar for almost 30 years. Bullying and plotting has never been two words to describe her. Dr. Vassar is honest, giving, caring. She puts others before herself at all times. She is a true public servant. She is not a bully. She holds others accountable and asks the hard, necessary questions and demands answers. She doesn't plot. She gets things done. I ask that Dr. Vassar has the opportunity to address the allegations made against her and to clear up any misunderstandings. I also ask the board to vote against any actions for the removal of Dr. Vassar from her seat. MSU needs Dr. Vassar. We need Dr. Vassar. I support Dr. Vassar. I ask that you all support her as well. Instead of wasting energy attacking her, attack and address the real issues. Also, please be clear. My support for Dr. Vassar does not negate the support for the sister survivors. Dr. Vassar supports the victims as well. Keep her in the seat. Let her do the job she was voted in to do and the job she can and will do. Clearly, this is bigger than Dr. Vassar and sounds like a diversion. After hearing the support of the speakers today, does it sound like Dr. Vassar is a bully? No, it does not. Address the real issues, leave her alone, and let her do her job. Thank you.
Interim President Woodruff, that concludes this morning's public participation on items not germane to the agenda. We are done with speakers that have signed up in terms of this morning's meeting.
Stop silencing.
Do you have a statement on behalf of Jayvon?
He did not give me a prepared statement, but we did speak.
I would rather that we sort of conclude with public participation at this stage. I do appreciate sort of... Thank you.
So I can check the public participation.
You're directly speaking. Let him speak.
Why are you silencing us? Time doesn't matter. That's all we have to say.
Go ahead, please.
Favor, let him speak. Yep.
Aye.
Please go ahead. I appreciate the vote. Please proceed with brief.
Thank you. Certainly, it's not my intent to cause that. I am not going to really get into the issues that have been discussed, but I want to share a perspective. I'm not Jayvon Simmons. I'm Lucius Vassar. I'm a two-time graduate of Michigan State University. I have a daughter who is a student, and I have a daughter in love who is a graduate. I'm here because I want you all to recognize the pain that you're hearing and to give you some context. Our children that have been here at this university are experiencing the same things that I experienced when I got here in 1987. They're the same things that led to a number of my friends to this day to come and occupy this building until their voices were heard. I encourage all of us to really work to try and address those issues. Clearly, you know that I am supporting unequivocally your board chair, but I also support your interim president. I also support many of you as I have in your previous careers and in your roles here. But I support you in doing the work that really benefits the members of this community. When Dr. Rima wanted to take this opportunity to serve, for those of you that know my background, I've worked in this space. It's not new to me. I've worked in the state legislature. I've worked in local government. I've worked as a lobbyist at the state and federal level. And I honestly didn't want her to do it because I know the ugly side of it. And it's her love for students that is genuine that you're hearing here. It was not something that had to be manufactured or orchestrated because she has spent time with them before now and shared with them, as have I, because I saw what black students were experiencing here and it looked too familiar and my children were experiencing it. So please, if we can just take a moment to take a breath, to really think about how we can really and truly serve this university. Finally, love has been talked about a lot. In a lot of the comments relative to the issues of today, people have said that they've been motivated by their love for the university. Love is a verb. It's action. It's what you do. It's what you don't do. It's my love that brings me here. It's Dr. Rima's love that brings her here and has led her to tears as she has tried to serve this university. And my love for her gives her unequivocal support. I need you to know publicly in this setting that I have your back. I always will. Keep doing what you're doing.
Chairperson Vassar will now present the liaison report.
Well, hold on. Can I make a motion? I know this is out of order. Can I make a motion?
Yes, you can. The bylaws don't.
No, he cannot.
Move to release the documents.
That's what I'd like to do.
Please do not disrupt the meeting. Let's try and kind of continue. Interim President Woodruff, please continue with the agenda.
I now call for Chairperson Rima Vassar to present the liaison reports, the chairperson's report, and trustee comments.
The chair can recognize people who want to make a motion according to Robert's rules.
Trustee Deno, if you would like, their bylaws do not preclude you from making a motion. If you would like to make a motion, I would like for you to be heard.
You cannot add a motion according to the board's bylaws from the floor like this. So please proceed with the report.
Robert's rules does not preclude that.
I'd like to make a motion to release the Nassar documents. I was wondering if there's two other trustees who would support.
All right, I'm going to make a comment with regard to the motion. First of all, I've recused myself from the previous action of the board. And as the one trustee on this board that worked with Rachel Denhollander for over 8 months, to reach an agreement with the university and the survivors to hopefully bring this matter to a conclusion and support it with Rachel, that conclusion, which I still believe in. And if there is a motion brought properly in front of this board to bring to that conclusion, including the documents, I'll support it. But this isn't the way you govern anything. And to bring a motion, whether it's at the last minute or at any time, I'm open to a special meeting. We don't have to wait till January or December or whenever else. But let's do it per our bylaws, and let's not ambush board members. Let's do it per our bylaws. My support of what Rachel Denhollander and I agreed to 6 years ago has not changed. That's it.
We'll wait for your special meeting after this one. Yeah. We got time. We got all day.
Please proceed with the liaison report at this stage would be appropriate. Thank you.
The motion on the floor is...
There is no valid motion on the floor.
The motion has been supported.
There is no
Dr.
Rima,
did
you make a motion? I appreciate the chair, we should proceed with the liaison report.
Let him be heard.
At this point, Trustee Deno, I apologize for not being able to honor your wish for transparency in this moment. I am not the parliamentarian, so I cannot run the meeting. I just can read my next line, so I apologize.
You never have anything to apologize to me for.
Next is the public participation liaison's report, chairpersons, and comments. So we have the student liaisons, all of your reports.
Hi, everyone. For those of you who have not had the privilege of meeting yet, my name is Emily Hoyampa, and I'm the ASMSU and MSU undergraduate student body president. It's been a hot minute since I spoke in this space, and it is the understatement of the century that a lot has happened since the September board meeting. Can't believe I'm going first with this also after everything that's just happened. ASMSU is grateful for the work we have started with many MSU administrators. First, we've been working with VP Lynch on campus safety and ensuring Alex, Ariel, and Brian are remembered in justice and healing, and nothing like February 13th happens again on this campus or anywhere else. Next, ASMSU has also been collaborating alongside Dr. Travis and CAPS on student mental health and pushing those resources out to more Spartans. Even further, we've enjoyed building a partnership with VP Ruglas to work on Title IX, RVSM, OCR reporting, and hate speech, because let's be real, it needs some work. And last but certainly not least, ASMSU has been meeting with Interim President Provost Yatsko and Interim President Woodruff for student concerns in and outside the classroom. This does not include everyone, so long story short, ASMSU has been busy. We love the work that we do, and we want to continue this work for all Spartans, please emphasize the all, and we'll continue to do so alongside the Faculty Senate, Council of Graduate Students, CORS and COPS, which is the Council of Racial and Ethnic Students, and Council of Progressive Students, and all others. But first and foremost, we want to see the Board of Trustees simply care. To start, as many of us here love this university, it is hard to even admit that we're Spartans. Students, faculty, staff, alumni, and many others should not be ashamed to be a Spartan, but rather be proud of it. So, you may be wondering, why aren't people, myself included right now, not proud to be a Spartan? So, let me give you a few reasons why. For one, it feels as if the school is always in a new scandal. If I'm being so honest, MSU being on national news every other week is not new to my past 3 years here. I'd list every scandal since my first year, but it's not even worth it because there's always something new and it is quite exhausting to keep up with. If you want Spartans to be proud of this school, we have to address the history and move forward rather than continue to hide from it. This starts with releasing the Nassar documents. To be frank, withholding these documents shows a lack of genuine care for survivors, opposing the principles MSU supposedly stands for. The fact that these survivors have been calling for the release of these documents and have been greeted by silence from MSU and the board is simply proving the narrative that has been talked about in public comment time and time again, that the board and this university do not listen to survivors or do not listen to people on this campus unless it actually benefits them. If MSU and the board claim they're going to learn and do better, I implore you to please take action now. Release the documents and give the survivors on this campus a tool to help with their healing journey. Another reason why students aren't proud to be Spartans is simply because of the support they're receiving. Sent out this morning, MSU's values are inclusivity, safety, and belonging. Yet, a blanket statement does not do the job because there does not seem to be any action to actually uphold these values. The lack of acknowledgement of problems and not wanting to get to know the students on this campus, especially the ones that are struggling, especially the ones that are already marginalized in a predominantly white institution, show that these values are not being upheld by the board and this university as a whole. Students of all backgrounds should not be coming to me saying that they don't feel safe, represented, or belong at MSU, and quite frankly, this rhetoric starts with how the board approaches problems. The board in this university cannot simply be acknowledging one side over the other. Everyone at this university needs to approach problems and concerns with an equitable lens and solution rather than thinking they already know what is best for them. Even with that, when problems are acknowledged, no one is actually stating the lack of equity and safety that is already present here. So once again, do better, be better, and please simply make an effort to listen and take action rather than pawning it off onto students to handle it themselves. To the board and whoever else is listening, please actually listen to student leaders and those who are public commenting today. With everything going on, people seem to forget that many people here, the students on this campus, especially the ones that public commented today, are actually students first. We came here to get a good degree, not to be trained in crisis management. I can only bring up so many issues and concerns, and with that, a lot of the issues I brought up are simply because my fellow Spartans do not have the representation here to do so. We have and will continue to ask for a student vote, and we also continue to push for a CORS and COPS liaison seat to the board, because if you're not doing your jobs and representing us, who will? And last but not least,
regarding the conflict on the board. Some of the best advice I've ever received when I got into this role is you cannot take care of yourself or someone else or a place, or in this case, a university, if you cannot take care of yourself. This holds true to the board. The reasons why students continue to be so disheartened with this school is because the problems are seeping down to life on campus. Specifically, the problems of this board should not be harming the university. People should be worrying about making sure they graduate and actually enjoying their college experience and not making a joke and dealing with every scandal that this school seems to be throwing at us every other day. So, before you try and fix everything on campus and actually do your job, make an effort to fix your own problems, please. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. In case you don't know me, my name is Maddie Dallas, and I'm currently serving as the at-large student liaison. I just wanted to start off by saying I appreciate you giving me the platform to not only bring up issues that are impacting students, but also the chance to speak up for the well-being and sake of the student body who might not have a chance to have their voice heard. I think it is safe to say that this past month has been an incredibly chaotic one filled with many different issues both within and outside of Michigan State. Due to this, I wanted to focus my report on student support during these times, which is something that you will see to be a reoccurring message throughout the rest of the liaisons. While student support is a relatively broad topic, I wanted to break it into two main categories, communication and assistance. As we're seeing a complex international issue impact the world, I wanted to stress the point that communication is key. This starts off with clarifying when and what the board should or shouldn't be speaking out on. The board has a very legitimate and large presence on campus, so ensuring that there is some form of clarity on what would be an issue that would prompt a statement is something that would be beneficial to all students. There needs to be an active understanding that what you do and what you say both publicly as the board and personally sets a tone on campus. Not everything needs a comment. Sometimes it's just about the support that happens internally. Going off of this, when addressing issues that might emotionally or personally be affecting different marginalized communities on campus, the focus should be more on facilitating positive and collaborative communication, along with providing more information and education, rather than just issuing vague and overarching statements that really seem to have no true care behind them. Knowledge is power, and the student body as a whole will only continue to fracture if misinformation and the lack of internal support continues to spread. I have personally seen the distress that can come from putting students into positions in which they might not be fully equipped or fully educated on to deal with, which leads into my second point under student support, assistance. We come to Michigan State to be students. This doesn't mean that we don't also want to be leaders or aren't capable to step up in these ways, but we are students first. We are still learning and growing much like everyone else in this room, but the advantage that you all have is that you have more experience and knowledge that has gotten you into the roles that you hold today. Michigan State is a diverse university, and because of that, we need to ensure that all communities are getting a voice and feeling as though they are being supported by administration. Student leaders are having to put out much bigger fires than the ones that might pertain to their specific job titles due to larger issues going on within the university and the world. I've seen and heard from many different students across campus in these past few weeks that they've fallen behind in school, felt as though they've been completely overwhelmed, or just having trouble managing all of their responsibilities. This should not be the case. There are many things that can be done to help bridge the gap between the board, administration, faculty, and students that could positively help student leadership in the present but also in the future. I think it would be a step in the right direction to create some sort of leadership initiative for the board members, university officials, and faculty members to create a strong relationship between different student leaders across campus. They would become a support for the student when they need a soundboard or just someone to step in when things get to an extreme, as we've seen happen recently, because at no point in time should students ever have to feel as though a position in which they have willingly and happily stepped into is taking a toll on their mental health. This initiative would also help facilitate positive collaboration and open conversations in a more conducive environment to students, as well as even help students look into the future by preparing them for life outside of college. I'm excited to continue to develop this idea with you all and continue to work to advocate for the success of the student body. Thank you.
I always feel bad. I always feel bad when I have to use a microphone because I have to move it up and it's just going to get brought right back down as soon as I'm done here. But good morning, everyone. My name is Taylor Sutton and I serve as the president of the Residence Halls Association. We represent over 15,000 students across our five neighborhoods here at MSU. To begin with, I'll start with the good news. Please report we're having a very strong year for engagement with our students. We've achieved quorum several weeks ago. Various pieces of legislation and projects, especially in our committees, are currently happening, and I hope to share more about those as the year continues. In addition, it's been a strong year for programming. Many of our events have already happened, and we have several coming up, especially related to stress relief events around finals and midterms, which I know that we are already in. I'm feeling the pressure myself with some of these papers, but we're getting there. In addition, we've been working on expanding our no-cost technology rental program to help support various RSOs and student orgs here on campus. One of the things I spoke about last time I was here was working on ways to directly collect and share student opinions on safety at this university. My team and I are working on finalizing a survey that will be going out here, I'm shooting for mid-November, in order to directly collect student voices related to certain aspects of campus safety and see what our students are prioritizing in things they need to feel safe here. We've also been working on several smaller projects to this aim already, working with Residence Education Housing Services as well as Department of Police and Public Safety, and expect to continue to work with them on many of these projects. In addition, we are working on organizing a series of town hall events that will be taking place around campus in our various neighborhoods over the next several months to provide another avenue to collect student voices. Between both of these, as well as other things we're working on, I want to collect as many student voices and both and directly raise them both to this board as well as other places within our university administration. On the note of safety, with the release of the action after action report from February 13th, I think safety continues to be a highlight in everyone's minds right now. I've taken the time to read through the report, and for many of you here, if you have not, I highly recommend that you do the same. For one, I would like to commend the university for already taking action towards many of the recommendations provided. I know, for one, I can attest that all of my classrooms have had the locks installed on the doors, which many students have expressed appreciation for. But I would like to reaffirm that there are more changes that need to come, and I hope to see them happen. And the Residence Halls Association is willing to continue to work alongside our campus partners to help make that happen and to help make students feel safe here. For those of you that know me, you know that I tend to keep things fairly lighthearted, but I feel the need to end on a slightly more serious note. For one, I would like to thank our Interim President Woodruff and Interim Provost Yaitsko and many others who have stepped up in interim roles in this university. However, given recent current events, as well as the approaching conclusion of the Presidential Search Committee, I feel the need to reaffirm that this university needs a strong, permanent leadership. We've heard about many of the upcoming projects at this university. We've heard talk about that MSU helping revolutionize the next generation of our education. If we want this to be successful, we require proper leadership in order for this to happen. Board members, please, as the Presidential Search Committee draws closer towards its conclusion and that deadline, and as various issues both within the board and externally continue to unfold around us, remember that we as students and as a broader university need you to make the right decisions for our success. I didn't initially have this in my notes, but I feel the need to add it. But as a survivor myself, I encourage the release of the Nassar documents. Thank you.
The microphone does not have to be lowered for me. Thank you, Board of Trustees, for doing all of this for free. I can't believe that you do it for free. And thank you to everyone that has worked with me personally, that being all of you, to create a better campus. I'm going to enumerate some of the ways in which we have worked together to create a better campus. The Council of Graduate Students is happy to announce that we have passed a resolution supporting the creation of a recreational and wellness center relief fund. Whether it is a scholarship or whatever is not yet clearly established. Our hope is that this fund will provide financial stability to graduate and professional students who are not currently exempted from paying the recreational and wellness center fee, which totals $340 a year, and which you heard about earlier today from the GEU. We are very excited to be working closely with the MSU administration to provide these funds to our students. The war in Gaza is one of several distressing situations.
Palestine.
sorry, Palestine, affecting the mental health and well-being of the graduate and professional student body. In response to this, COGS has agreed to work with Dr. Alexis Travis to help us incorporate trauma-informed practices into our organization's leadership. We believe that this partnership will benefit our community both now and in the future. Free Palestine. Regarding the conflict brewing within the Board of Trustees, our organization is diligently taking the time to review the evidence and develop an appropriate response with input from our constituents. However, my hope is that the Board of Trustees can resolve this conflict and function in a manner that is civil, constructive, inclusive, and transparent to all elements of the university. We need a board that can work together to solve problems and build trust with the MSU community. I just wanted to fly my peace flag real quick. Thank you.
It's only through collective action that our voices are heard. Thank you.
Thank you, students. Thank you for your input and your leadership and your time. We will now hear the faculty liaison report.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jack Lipton. I am the chair of the Faculty Senate for Michigan State University. It's good to see you all again. I'm going to give you the report, the faculty liaison report of our faculty delegation for this month. So the faculty delegation appreciated the frank discussion we had with the trustees yesterday. We raised concerns regarding the ethical framework they have created for themselves and whether their oversight and self-policing are sufficient to ensure that they are meeting the absolute highest ethical and moral standards as the final governing authority at Michigan State University. As we mentioned to the board, many of us have concerns about choosing a president in the midst of the board chaos that we have observed here and in the media. We even discussed suspension of the presidential search. We advised the board, as we did 1 month ago, that drastic wholesale changes to their ethics and conflicts of interest policies are desperately needed. We shared the Faculty Senate resolution in advance of our vote last night. We warned that specific incidents and actions outlined in Trustee Scott's letter regarding Chair Vassar, which did occur, violate the criteria of MSU's accrediting body, the Higher Learning Commission, or as I will say in the future, HLC. You know, I respect Dr. Vassar's desire to do great things at this university. I know she wants to fight for students, but she can also occasionally not necessarily meet the high ethical standards that we expect from the chair of the board. Both things can be true. Her intent could be, excuse me, I'm speaking. Her intent can be true. The methods may call into question certain judgments. As a result, last night, Faculty Senate passed a resolution, voted 52-4, which stated, whereas Board of Trustees Chairperson Rima Vassar allegedly inappropriately interfered with matters delegated to the administration, appeared in an advertisement for the private wealth management firm Spartan Wealth Management, founded and managed by a former trustee, traveled on a donor's private jet, and dismissed suggestions that her conduct was not consistent with the university's standards, and whereas MSU is accredited through the Higher Learning Commission and must comply with its criteria for accreditation policy, which states in relevant part 2C4, the governing board preserves its independence from undue influence on the part of donors, elected officials, ownership interests, or other external parties, and 2C5, the governing board delegates day-to-day management of the institution to the institution's administration and expects the institution's faculty to oversee academic matters. And whereas, in a statement, Chairperson Vassar acknowledged flying on a donor's private plane to sit courtside at an MSU basketball game and failed to address the allegation that she effectively endorsed an external party's wealth management firm by appearing in an advertisement in her capacity as chairperson. And whereas Chairperson Vassar's statement did not address the allegation that she, quote, without the knowledge or participation of the interim president, met, quote, with Lansing officials to pitch moving university colleges and students to a Lansing site. Therefore, be it resolved, Chairperson Rima Vassar's admitted and uncontested actions violate the standards of quality by which the Higher Learning Commission determines whether an institution merits accreditation, and as a consequence, the Faculty Senate calls on her to resign from the Board of Trustees. And be it further, not continue until complaints to the Higher Learning Commission are investigated by the administration and evidence is provided that we are again in compliance with HLC criteria. Resolved that if Chairperson Vassar does not resign as chair, the Faculty Senate calls on the Board of Trustees to remove her as chairperson and calls on the governor to begin the process of removing Chairperson Vassar from the Board of Trustees per MCL 168293. And be it further resolved that the Faculty Senate will file an official complaint with the Higher Learning Commission regarding Chairperson Vassar's actions and request that the HLC will provide the trustees with the professional development for which the Faculty Senate has previously called. We urge the board to have a wholesale reevaluation of their processes, priorities, and actions and bring us into compliance with the Higher Learning Commission criteria and make any ARC investigation into the findings public. I thank Trustee Scott for bringing these issues into the public sphere. Finally, I would like to read a statement from our Faculty Senate Chair Emeritus and Presidential Search Committee member, Dr. Karen Kelly Blake, Associate Professor in the Center of Bioethics and Social Justice, who is here with us today. In the back, these are her words. Good morning. Thank you, Trustee Scott, for your courage in exposing the continued deterioration of board functioning. You have depicted a pattern of behavior that reveals the board as the governing body of Michigan State University is in freefall. The no confidence votes remain in force from all entities at this university. The Michigan State University Board of Trustees has continued to destabilize the university through its lack of transparency, failed leadership, continued gross overreach, and violation of its own code of ethics. The board's fiduciary duty is to put the school first above any personal interests, but its perpetual chaos and failures in leadership are actively endangering Michigan State University's accreditation and its efforts to attract exceptional candidates for the presidential search. Earlier this year, I had the wonderful opportunity to be the keynote speaker for the College of Human Medicine Student National Medical Association Cultural Celebration. The association supports underrepresented, minoritized medical students. In my keynote, I emphasized to students that they were unapologetically qualified to occupy the spaces at CHM and at this university. It is beyond me that, a few months later, I am in the unenviable position of having to tell the MSU Board of Trustees that you are, in fact, wholly unqualified to sit on this board. You are not qualified when you fail to learn from past behavior, when you dismiss learning and professional growth opportunities, and when you refuse to admit to mistakes and missteps. You're not qualified when you are afraid of litigation and you are subservient to the donor class. Not qualified when you disregard the harm you continue to perpetuate. Not qualified when you lack critical and thoughtful assessment of how one's actions produce consequences for a university community, lack long-term planning and strategic thinking, and lack principles and ethical behavior. Not qualified when you lack humility. To quote a dear friend and colleague, quote, principles are principles only if they hold when it is hard. If they do not hold when it is hard, then principles are hobbies. The board is not qualified when it fails to see its actions causing its own peril. The university community wanted a different relationship with this board. We hoped for improvements when the Faculty Senate called for professional development and board training, but improvements can only come with a new board. The state of Michigan Constitution gives the board unfettered control over university affairs. We overcome that problem by getting out the vote and engaging in activism to end election of boards for three universities in the state, as Michigan is the only state in the union to elect university boards. If one is unqualified for a job, then one should have the opportunity to improve and gain the needed qualifications. However, when one squanders that opportunity, as demonstrated here at MSU, then one must seek employment elsewhere. This community demands stability, and it is heartbreakingly clear that this board is uniquely unqualified to govern. Thank you.
We don't support your statement.
Okay, thank you.
What about the docs?
Please refrain. Let's continue with the meeting.
Thank you, Dr. Lipton, for your remarks.
We call for decorum in the room. Call for decorum, Trustee Vassar.
Thank you, Jack Lipton. I appreciate your comments. I want to first read the prepared comments that I want to make sure I get to, and then I will talk about this week. Part of my life's work has been advancing access and inclusion for students of all backgrounds. I take special interest in this work at MSU, as evidenced today, and would like to highlight two new programs. First, I'd like to echo the excitement about MSU's position as one of the first institutions in the state to offer a tuition-free scholarship for qualifying in-state residents. This new program will redefine college access and affordability, and I look forward to seeing its impact as we prepare the next generation of citizens and leaders, innovators and creators, and so many others who will help strengthen our state, nation, and world. This is critical for minoritized youth in Michigan. We do know that black women are the most educated subpopulation in the United States, and they are also the ones saddled with the most debt-to-income ratio for paying back student loans to pay for that education. So I am really, really happy about this new program. Second, on a smaller scale but very important, is the CREATE microgrant program offered by MSU's College of Arts and Letters and facilitated by the Dean's Arts Advisory Council with support from the MSU Federal Credit Union, thank you, and departments across the university. This program offers students amazing opportunities to pursue creative endeavors. The board congratulates the 13 students awarded grants, and we look forward to seeing the results of their creative projects in poetry and painting, screenwriting and sculpture, and music composition. This week has been tough. We've been in a pressure cooker together. That's how I feel. I apologize to the 2.3 million people who voted for me and the students and faculty for the spectacle this board has subjected you to and to some of the things that I probably could have handled differently. I value my relationships with my colleagues, and I genuinely hope that we can turn the page and work together for this institution. I have heard you over and over. We are committed, I would hope, to the same ideals: transparency, accountability, equity, and justice. I might be new to this world of cutthroat, ruthless politics. I'm an educator. One thing I know is that I must be doing something right if folks are coming this stridently for me. Unfortunately, I do not expect these attacks to stop. When I ran for this position, I promised accountability and transparency. I will continue to be transparent and accountable as questions and unfounded accusations continue to be lobbied at me. I do want to make one clarification. I have always been committed to transparency. Every investigation, and there's been several that this board has endeavored, I've participated fully with. I do not appreciate this idea that I'm not participating with this investigation, the ongoing Jones Day investigation. This idea that I have not committed to giving my phone is a lie. Wednesday, we were given a mandate around our phones. Thursday, we agreed to give our phones. All of this before is a lie. You can, I'm sure the FOIAs will come. You can FOIA the documents and see when the phone requests were made and what we decided to do. Please don't believe that I am a liar. I just don't do that. It's not worth it. This idea that I'm not transparent is a problem, particularly if you know my record. I don't engage in activities that are, I'm trying to make sure I'm careful so that I don't implement or implicate anyone on this board. There have been times where I didn't agree with the board on certain things, like the certification of, with the administration on certain things, like the certification of OIE reports. I didn't participate. Until we got proper training, I just didn't participate. My idea of transparency and accountability is supporting and being accountable to survivors. Additionally, I'm looking forward to a review of my conduct, as I am not aware of any policy I have violated. Meanwhile, I call for the following actions. Because we do not have, ongoing professional development. This board has engaged in professional development in the past, but we do need training on onboarding. We need to be aligned with applicable Association of Governing Boards of Universities and Colleges and their recommendations for governance. I'm committed to continue that development. Secondly, because we do not have a travel policy related to private transportation, I am requesting that the ARC committee construct a clear policy to inform our choices around private flights, for example. I do know that several people on this board have been on private flights. I did not know that that was a clear conflict of interest. Okay, we need a bright light. We need a bright, shining line of a demarcating guideline so that we can all be held accountable to the same standard consistently. I call on, in conjunction with the Senior Vice President, the Chief Financial Officer, and Treasurer, the revision of university travel guidelines applicable to the board, including clarifying parameters around private aircraft travel. Three, guidelines regarding congratulatory ads should also be agreed upon via our ARC committee. I also do know that several people on this board have engaged in ads. That's fine. If it's a problem, we need to identify the problem and come up with guidelines and then apply them consistently. In conjunction with the General Counsel and the Chief Audit, Risk, and Compliance Officer, a review and proposal of revisions to both the Board of Trustees Code of Ethics and Conduct of Board of Trustees Policy 103, Conflict of Interest Policy, as may be necessary to further the board's fiduciary responsibilities, I would like that review to be done. Thirdly, these issues on the board predate me. I'm committed to settling the next, to setting the next president up for success. I call for a 360 culture and climate survey. Thank you, Faculty Senate, for passing your resolution last week. Students, faculty, staff, administrators, donors, alum, and the board need to participate in this assessment. The Chronicle of Higher Ed asks why this keeps happening at MSU and goes on to delineate the many controversies we've experienced since Nassar. I ask the same questions. Protracted, compounded, persistent traumas have not been identified and healed. We need an outside firm to provide a diagnosis, prognosis, treatment plan, and progress monitoring so that we can not continue to have the same problems over and over and over and over again, year after year, board member after board member. People are hurting. I remain committed to change. Again, it is my hope that we can put divisions behind us and attend to the important work of the university. After Saturday's anti-Semitic debacle, the persistent racism Black students have endured, rampant Islamophobia and xenophobia, questions around the administration's decision-making and unresolved issues related to OIE investigations, we want to know who knew what and when and what they did about it. We deserve those answers. Perhaps most importantly, the task of selecting a new president. There's much work to do. I support the ordinance that was proposed today around hate crime. I support the students who came today to speak on behalf of their own issues, and for those who also came to speak on my behalf, I am committed to you. I want to make sure that you all feel that you are safe and welcomed, that you feel included, and that you belong on this campus. You pay your tuition. You chose MSU. MSU needs to choose you. Students, faculty, and staff are counting on us, the board, to ensure a bright future for this university. I will not let them down. Go green.
Go white.
That moves us to other trustee comments. Vice Chair Kelly.
Okay, I wasn't going to make any comments today, but I'm going to have some very brief comments. Once again, we're talking about ourselves, the board. And what I've thought about over the last couple of weeks is supposedly why we're all here, which is public service. That's something I hold very important. And public service is usually time, effort, and money. But public service is also something known as public sacrifice. And sacrifice means that sometimes you're embarrassed, sometimes your reputation is challenged, sometimes friendships are challenged. But if you're on this board to do what's in the best interest of the university, and that's your only goal, then reputation, embarrassment, friendships have to be put aside. I've heard a lot over the last couple of weeks of I. And it should be what's in the best interest of the university, nothing else. Now, with that in mind, I am chair of the Audit Risk and Compliance. We've received a letter from one of the trustees dated October 20th, 2023. It was referred to the Internal Office of Audit Risk and Compliance. Appropriately so, we've received a recommendation that it be investigated by a third party. The board unanimously reviewed that, and there is no objections to that recommendation. So we will move forward with a complete and fair independent investigation of the allegations, not only contained in that letter, but if there are any other allegations involving board members' violation of our code of ethics. So with that said, let me just finish with this. We need to follow the rules. Otherwise, it's chaos. So that's my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kelly. Trustee Byram.
Thank you. I'm going to start with some good news, and then I will go to personal comments. This week, I was named as the new faculty liaison. It's a position that I'm looking forward to performing. I want to lift up some of the accomplishments of the faculty of recent. Say congratulations to the team of MSU researchers who, alongside colleagues at Purdue University, were awarded $2 million by the National Science Foundation for a biomanufacturing project. They are going to be helping to forge a greener future where homes and other buildings can be built with low-cost and sustainable materials. I'd also like to recognize the multidisciplinary research team that was awarded $3 million grant from the National Institute of Health. They're going to be contributing to a healthier future by studying the time of day you should exercise to improve your blood pressure. So I think all of us on the board might be interested in that study's results. And finally, I want to congratulate the MSU scholars from the Create for STEM Institute who will use the $1.9 million grant to reimagine how energy is taught in high school physics classes. So I want to congratulate our outstanding faculty for those grants. Now on a more personal note, I want to start by thanking Karen Kelly Blake for your comments today. I have a great deal of respect for you. I enjoyed working with you last year when you were the Faculty Senate chairperson. Michigan State is a great university, and it deserves great leadership. This has been a very painful week, as I'm sure all of the comments today have given everyone a crystal clear view of that. And I take no joy in the allegations that have been leveled against Dr. Vassar. I publicly supported the letter sent by Trustee Scott, and I thanked her for her courage to speak out. I'm going to let Trustee Scott speak in greater detail during her time in public comment. The board got to this place of chaos, it's a common word this morning, because of a failure to be able to deal with its behavior openly and without fear of retaliation. This has not been a secret that among the MSU community, as evidenced by the repeated calls from Faculty Senate to get our house in order and to engage in board governance training. Chair Vassar outlined in her comments some of the activities that we need to get in order, and that is have a clear line on travel policy. It is to have clear guidelines on conflict of interest. And the governance principles that at the beginning of this year, before we started a presidential search, are yet to be adopted. And that really defines the governance role of the university and keeps us in our lane or in our role. I think all of us at the board table support those. They're in various stages of being worked on. They've been being worked on for months, including the tax policy that I know Lisa Frace has been very involved in and sits in the ARP committee and is almost finalized. So we have a presidential search underway. And MSU will not be able to achieve a successful presidency and stable leadership that this university so desperately needs until and unless the board can correct its behavior. And I think that's the real finer point in all of this. Whether we pause the search, whether we go forward and have a president identified before Thanksgiving, we will not have a successful presidency if this board cannot get its collective act together. I believe to make these necessary corrections now before it escalates any further, we do need to fully investigate the allegations outlined in Trustee Scott's letter. That is being done, and Dan Kelly explained that in his comments, and I support that. Any findings must be taken seriously, and they must be acted upon with transparency. Earlier this morning, I brought forward for discussion when we just before the board meeting that we have a resolution to remove Dr. Vassar as board chair. That did not get 3 votes to put in front of us today. I also had a conversation with her that I think in the best interest of the university, you should step aside in this interim. That was my request, and that decision lies with Dr. Vassar. But at the end of the day, this is a great university, and it deserves great leadership. And I will do my part to make sure that that leadership is here for future generations. Thank you.
Trustee Deno.
Gavel. Decorum in the boardroom, please.
Trustee
Dano. Excuse me. I'll be really short. I just want to say, I want to mirror what Trustee Dan Kelly said, that basically, you know, I got on this board. I wanted to work with others. I wanted to build coalitions to make this university and to make our communities better. When I put that resolution today, you called it an ambush, and if that's how you feel, I'm sorry about that. I apologize to the rest of the trustees. My intent was never to ambush anybody. My intent was for what I think to do the right thing and try to move it forward. So I apologize to anyone who feels they were ambushed, and hopefully we can work together to get it done right. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Dano. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Thank you. So I want to begin by thanking all of the speakers who came and showed up today for your time and your courage. As always, I am listening. I see you and I hear you and I'm listening. I appreciate your action of showing up and also your words, and the words matter. Among the prepared remarks that the administration offered me to share with all of you, I will echo the thanks and gratitude to Dean Green for serving as Dean of the Law College. As some of you may know, that was my original academic home for 10 years, and I appreciate the work that she has done to raise the law school's national profile in terms of its commitment to diversity in particular, and also the work that she's done in terms of enrollment of the students. It's critical to have a profession that reflects the diversity of the public it serves, and I appreciate the work that she's done. I appreciate that that's a commitment of the law school in this university. And I will say that I'm looking forward to reading her scholarship on Justice Thurgood Marshall. Having done my own research in his archives, I am eager to see what she will be writing as an example of the extraordinary scholarship that goes on every day here. And we, of course, heard more of that this morning as well in the presentation. As some of you, maybe many of you, certainly those of you from the media who are here know, I don't speak to the media about board business. I make that choice mindful of our MSU Board of Trustees Code of Ethics and Conduct, so I don't speak out about board business to the media. Although I respect the right of any individual trustee to make their own choice in that and to also speak out as an individual. But I will talk to all of you as our MSU community, and so that's what I'm going to do right now. And I want to address some of the things that have been in the media. I agree with Trustee Kelly. It is the last thing I want to do to sit up here and say aye or talk about the board. But again, I feel like given things that have been in the media, something needs to be said, and this is the appropriate form to do it, to speak with the community. And so I want to, in response to both the letter from Trustee Scott and some of the media that followed, and then also the resolution from the Faculty Senate last night, say a few things. I want to first begin with that Chronicle of Higher Education article, actually, that came out on October 24th. And in it, Chair Vassar, you remarked that I feel aggrieved because my colleagues voted for you over me as chair earlier this year. I'd like to set the record straight on that. But first, assuming the quote's accurate, I'd like to ask you to stop attacking me. There's nothing here to fight over. I'm not the reason why Trustee Scott wrote her letter, and I'm not responsible for the allegations in it, the facts in it. This has nothing to do with the trustees' feelings. We're faced instead with questions of leadership, and we have to deal with them professionally. And regarding that Chronicle article, here's what is true. I don't feel the least bit aggrieved about not being chair. I was, if anything, relieved, not aggrieved. I don't aspire to be chair. I didn't run for chair 2 years ago. And I will decline again when, under our new process for rotating the chair, my turn comes. I was willing to assume that role only because my fellow trustees asked me to do so. Two of them changed their mind the morning of the vote. One texted me shortly before the vote. The other sprung the news when she cast her vote live, and I've respected their decisions. None of that should detract from what Trustee Scott has brought forward. And in that same Chronicle of Higher Education article, Chair Vassar described Trustee Scott's letter as an old-style political hit job. Yeah. And one thing that I feel strongly about is that politics are not the issue here. I am an elected trustee, but I view my role as one of public trust. My obligation is entirely to the university's interests, not my own. Before my appointment to this board, I had never declared a political affiliation. I had never contemplated running for elected office until I was appointed. I'm an academic and I'm an attorney. I serve as a volunteer to promote higher education. And for those who see only politics, I'm of the view that even politics have to defer to higher ethical values, especially when the goal is to serve in the public interest and to serve our students in the public interest. And it would be strange.
Call for order in the boardroom, please.
It would be strange to accuse Trustee Scott as being politically motivated when she herself voted to elect Rima Vassar as chair. I find it regrettable that circumstances compelled a trustee to decide that public exposure is the only viable way to address grave concerns about leadership on this board. We have tried to resolve these issues internally. Since January 23, board members have each undergone at least 15 hours of training and development with three different experts on board governance and communication. We've asked questions, we've raised concerns, and they've gone unaddressed. In full transparency to the MSU community, I want to share what I know about the items in Trustee Scott's letter. So on the negotiation of the Gupta settlement, during the February 9th, 2023 board session, the board was informed that Vassar had engaged in settlement negotiations with Gupta, including authorizing the board's law firm Quinn Emanuel to draft a joint statement, and at the time the board had not been yet named in the lawsuit. It's also true that the interim president, who was herself a defendant in that lawsuit, communicated to us that the chair's actions undermined the university's ability to reach a resolution at that time, and so what Trustee Scott has reported is accurate. On the release of the Quinn Emanuel report, during the February 10th public meeting, the full board voted to release that report, but didn't set a deadline for when it would happen. And after that vote, Gupta sued the board, and our attorneys, both from Quinn Emanuel and our own general counsel, advised the board to delay the release of the report. And Vassar did not follow that advice, but instead released the report. Again, what Trustee Scott said on that was accurate. On the Attorney General's communication regarding the NASA documents, I have no direct knowledge of the communications between Vassar and the Attorney General. I've read the state news article quoting the Attorney General explaining that Chair Vassar had asked her to send the recent letter reaffirming the demand for the documents. Because the documents came up today, I will just reiterate my position on that has not changed. I agree with Trustee Kelly in supporting the process that he negotiated with Rachel Denhollander, and I always have, or something similar to that, and I will continue to do so. On the advertisement with Spartan Wealth Management in Vassar, I've seen the advertisement in the Lansing State Journal. I don't have any knowledge about it. It speaks for itself. On the text messages with the former trustee, I've read the Deadspin article. I've seen the text messages in response to a media FOIA request. And again, that speaks for itself. On the leak of a claimant's name and the investigation that followed, I learned of the claimant's name in the matter involving the former football coach for the first time in the news reports on September 10th of 2023. On September 11th, the board learned that a particular member of the board was alleged to have leaked the claimant's name. I have fully cooperated with the Jones Day investigation. That includes sitting for an interview a couple of weeks ago. At the time of the interview, I agreed with the protocol requested by Jones Day for the search of my phone. On the February 13th after action review, on September 29th, the independent firm Security Risk Management Consultants briefed the board about its after action report. One of the conclusions found that some members of the board acted beyond their expertise and outside of their appropriate role. A trustee disputed the consultant's findings. Vassar suggested that the consultants meet with that trustee before publicizing the final report to address the concerns and take them potentially into consideration. The version of the report released to the public, it's accurately depicted as watered down from the original version, speaks for itself. On the private jet use, my only knowledge about Chair Vassar's use of private jets is that the chair of Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee stated during a recent board work session that she shouldn't have taken the trips. When a question was raised about whether the fair market value should be paid under board policies, she stated she would not do so. It is true we don't have clear policies on that. And then on the amendment to the chair selection process. So the recently adopted amendment that changes the chair selection process is a reform that the board has been considering since at least 2019. And Chair Vassar stated during the work session that when we discussed it, that she would publicly call those of us supporting that change as racist, and she followed through on that. And as Trustee Scott wrote in her letter, race played no role in that vote. I appreciate that Trustee Scott's letter has been referred to the Audit, Risk, and Compliance Committee for a full investigation. I understand it's going to be conducted by an independent third party. I believe the board also needs to consider reforms to our policies and procedures related to ethics, conduct, conflicts of interest, and especially how we hold each other accountable. I will say for me personally, this has been extremely difficult and not a situation I would ever want to see a future trustee have to face. And I'm sure I'm echoing a sentiment that all of us feel on that. That's probably something we could all agree on. Everything that we've seen this year reinforces the urgency of that review. I'm proud to serve the university as a trustee. It's an amazing institution of higher learning. I have learned so much in this role about the university's positive impact on our students, our alumni, our state, our country, and the world through the work of our faculty, our students, and our administrators. All of us as trustees should be laser focused on advancing the university's interest. And my hope is that this moment of transparency, as painful as it has been, will allow us to do exactly that in the coming days and years.
Thank you, Trustee Kanacki Jefferson.
Listen, I have gone through what you're going through. This is a public convention.
There'll be order in the boardroom, please.
My name is Cynthia A. Johnson, and well, and I am on your side. I know I'm out of order, but you, I asked to be in here to speak, and you guys would not allow me. You told me it took 48 hours up to 9 o'clock yesterday morning when this just happened. So you didn't want us here in the first place. Yeah. I know what you're doing. Cynthia A. Johnson was publicly lynched.
So we can just continue like the business of the meeting.
Is being publicly
lynched.
And she's being used. And the other one, Scott, is being used.
Please leave the room.
Order in the boardroom, please.
You know what? God don't like what y'all doing. And until you do right by the people, nothing is going to be right for you. Nothing.
We will continue the meeting. Trustee Pierce.
I wasn't elected to the board. I had the honor of being appointed in January by Governor Whitmer. I had no idea what I was going to face. And when I took my oath, I promised to pay attention and keep sacred the code of ethics and perform my fiduciary responsibilities. Since January, let me tell you what we have been dealing with besides the business of the university that the students have brought up and the faculty has brought up. We had a mass shooting on February 13th. I was then, along with the other trustees, sued by Sanjay Gupta. I was then, along with the other trustees, sued by the survivors. We had Mel Tucker. We are in the midst of a presidential search. And then last Saturday night, we saw, for the world to see and talk about, anti-Semitism on the Jumbotron. Following that was my colleagues on this board publicizing what should have been talked about as a family behind closed doors. And I'm embarrassed by it, and I'm disappointed. I'm going to quote Monty Williams, who is the new coach of the Detroit Pistons, who said in a group a few weeks ago, "Everything you want is on the other side of hard. Everything you want is on the other side of hard." And so I was asked the other day, why don't you just resign? You weren't elected. You have a big job. Why do you do it? It's so hard. I'm doing it because on the other side of hard is everything we want. We want a unified university that is educating our next generation of leaders. We want to support our students and our faculty and our staff and the administration and each other. And we've got to get there. And so I'm in it for the long run.
Thank you, Trustee Pierce. Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I'm going to read my prepared comments. Like others have said, there are so many inspiring accomplishments and events to lift up across our university. I'll just name a few, and as a lawyer, I would like to shine a spotlight on Dean Green's third annual Dean Speaker Series. This series will bring leading experts on regulation, global governance, and artificial intelligence for what I am sure will be a thought-provoking presentation. Thank you to Dean Green for bringing the speaker series to the campus and for your service. Last month, I had the privilege of participating in the Summit on Achieving Black Equity at MSU, where Dr. Lee June, who's here, along with Dr. James Weathers, delivered insightful presentations, and Dr. June shared analytics on the current status of black students, faculty, and staff at our university, shedding light on our present position and leading discussions on the actionable steps needed to achieve black equity by 2030. During homecoming weekend, I had the honor of attending the Shirley M. Rogers Distinguished Alumni and Scholarship Awards Jazz Brunch hosted by the MSU Black Alumni. And I want to congratulate again award recipients. Clifton R. Wharton Jr. Award was Murray Edwards. Trailblazer Award was our own VP Marlon Lynch. The Community University Service Award was Tari Siegler. And our Rising Star Award was Tawana Hatcher. So congratulations to all of our award recipients. Finally, as a fan of our student athletes, I would like to echo the interim president and congratulate our women's soccer team, who has been very successful. And this past Sunday, they earned their second consecutive Big Ten title after compiling a team win record exceeding only by last year's. I also hear that the women's volleyball games are getting record attendance, which is also very exciting. I'd like to now move on to my own personal comments. And I would ask that those that have things to say, as when you were speaking, people gave you the respect to allow you to speak without being interrupted. So I would ask that people allow me that. And if not, then maybe you should leave.
We think you should leave.
We will. Okay, well, please.
I'm going to say what I would like to say, and I would ask that people be respectful and allow me to speak. Thank you. So when I decided to run for the MSU Board of Trustees, it was for reasons that I wanted to affect change here at the university that I love so very dearly. I was an alum and also a parent of a current student at the time that I came on this board. I understood I was walking into turmoil, but I had no idea that that turmoil would continue consistently. I mean, we have not gotten a break since I started on this board. But I will say that there were some objectives that I took to heart, some things that I wanted to accomplish. And what I heard today was some revisionist history about my, and I don't want to say I, actually, so I'm not going to talk about my, but some of the changes that were made within my first 2 to 3 years here on this board, and some things that I had some very big, responsible insight into, I would say, along with other trustees, Joel Ferguson, who's no longer on this board, Melanie Foster, who I see sitting in the front row, Trustee Tebay, who actually went on a tour with me to actually implement some things that I felt were important for people of color on this campus. It's very hard for me to sit here and listen to people act as if there's not two black women that are sitting up here on this table. I am also black. And you can laugh all you want to, because maybe I have not met you and had conversations with you, or maybe you have felt that I have not done the things that you want me to do. But what I will say is what I've done speaks for itself. So let me talk about some of the things that I have done since I've been here. So, yes, I will. So I have had multiple meetings with various constituency groups,
of the people of color on this campus. Not just black students, NPHC, the MSUBA, multiple meetings even with BSA.
Please.
I have had...
Please, sorry, Trustee Scott. Please refrain. Otherwise, please refrain from kind of interrupting, going back and forth. Otherwise, you will be asked to leave.
She's asking us questions.
I don't believe that I asked a question.
No,
I'm going to just
Scott's
continue my.
Please continue.
When President Stanley got here, I, along with other individuals that worked on the DEI strategic plan and the strategic plan for this university, pushed for having someone here like Dr. Jabbar Bennett to work on the institutional racism and issues of discrimination that were present on this campus. I worked with Quorum, MSUBA, and others to make sure that President Stanley, during his tenure, set it up so that we could have direct communications between he and the provost's office and MSUBA, something that was never achieved prior to me being on this board. I also, along with Trustee Tebay and Joel Ferguson, pushed for the first ever multicultural center, which has already broken ground on this campus. You can laugh, but that was something that strategically we worked on and pushed to make happen.
We don't even have a meeting room.
Okay.
So I think once more, and you'll be asked to leave. That's where we're at right now, okay?
Okay.
Appreciate it. I'm just trying to sort of keep us moving along. Trustee Scott.
I, along with people like Dr. Stephanie Anthony, who I thought I saw in here at one point in time, were instrumental in pushing for the first ever Juneteenth celebration that this campus ever had. I was part of that. I also have had multiple meetings because I was one of the other. Trustee Tebay would be probably the only other one that spent at least two times a month, hours, meeting with students of color, students that weren't of color, faculty and staff that had issues for years. We were the only two trustees sitting up here in the library in that stupid little boardroom that they gave us to meet with people, listening to concerns and making sure that we implemented the things that were of concern so that there would be change while we were here as trustees. I would also say that we have, as a board, talked with administration, talked with Mark Largent, even just as recently as yesterday, bringing up issues concerning black faculty on this campus and the need to have more deans of color on this campus. I've had those conversations about the declining enrollment of African American students on this campus and trying to strategically think about things that we can do in order to create a better pipeline. I've done that. Now, I don't toot my horn all the time. I don't go out around telling people all the things that I do. But for someone to come in here and try to act as if I have not given my blood, sweat, and tears to this university in trying to make a difference, not just for our black students, but all of our students of color, because you all are all of our students. I have more than one constituency base to support on this campus and who I have to recognize and try to do what is best for the overall university, not just one group of people, not just one constituency group, not just one political party. I am here for what is in the best interest of Michigan State University. And the reason why nobody else wants to come forward and talk about everything in my letter is because what has happened to me over this last week. And my mom told me not to cry. But what has happened to me over this last week of threats of physical harm to me, bullying, being called anti-black, being called a house Negro, that I'm playing in plantation politics, that I'm not black, I'm a black person or a white person in the black body, you all have no idea. I know you told me not to cry. Sir, you have no idea the stuff that has been said about me this week. And all I wanted to do was stand up for people who don't have a voice because they're so afraid to do what I have done, and that is to take the darts that have been aimed at me for standing up for what is right. And had I not stood up,
we would continue in this chaos, and I cannot watch it because I would not be here if it weren't for this university. I would not be here if it weren't for MSU. And I'm sorry I'm crying, Mom, because I know you're going to tell me off. I apologize. I'm sorry. I know you're disappointed. I'm not strong like my mother. I'm not strong like my mother. I'm sorry. She always tells me I'm so freaking emotional. And I'm sorry about that. But what I will say is I think it is horrible. Horrible for people that don't have all the facts to try to act as if you do and to make a judgment. I put this letter out here so that what is going to happen would happen. And that is so we could have an investigation because unfortunately, nobody felt that they could do anything because they didn't want to be called racist. And I will look at every single one of my colleagues and I will say not a one person up here is a racist. It's wrong. It is wrong to weaponize our race. We've been through a lot. And it's right to deal with it when it should be dealt with. But none of this, none of it has been because of Rima's race. None of it. I'm black. I voted for her. Do you know how hard it is for me to have come out? Do you? Nobody understands what I feel inside. And I'm tired of it. I'm tired of the bullying. I feel sorry for our interim president because she's not even speaking out because she's afraid. People can't talk because they're afraid. And we say we want transparency. If you want transparency, then you let this investigation go through and you hold your comments until you see what the facts say. Because I didn't put one damn lie in that letter. Not one. It has been fact checked. But I also want to say the attacks on Joel Ferguson pissed me off. That man gave more to this university than any other black person. It is insulting to me that people would come in here and say that me having a building that I am a 50% owner of a business with that man has any conflict. But just to let you know, you're wrong. I actually went to our general counsel and talked to my board about whether anybody thought it was a conflict before I ever did it. That's being forthcoming. That is being transparent. I didn't do anything about behind anybody's back. So fact check that. That business has absolutely no conflict whatsoever. And let's go back to Nasser because I'm so darn tired of people saying that I voted against and I was the deciding vote. Please point to a record that ever says that myself, since Kelly T. Bay and I got on this board, that we ever voted one time on Nasser. There has never been a vote since I have been on this board related to Larry Nasser. So stop it with this revisionist history that I, in some way, am the reason why that did not happen. There was never a vote since I've been on this board. That vote was made before I got on this board. I want to say Dan Kelly was 2018 when you guys voted on it. There's never been a vote, so stop blaming me. When we talk about scapegoats, I have been the freaking scapegoat for why this has not happened. It is not my fault. There are five people that would have to come up here and vote to make that happen. So if you want to blame people, you blame all of us. You don't blame just me. To be silent is complicit. When you see something wrong and you've tried behind closed doors to talk about it, when you get attacked when you talk about it, when you get threatened that you're going to regret it when you come forward, that's what makes people stay silent. If we want transparency at this university, people should be able to speak their freaking truth. Without threat, it's wrong. I wanted to say I feel so bad for Diane. for whatever reason, I heard, oh, she's on a puppet string, whatever. Okay, I heard that about Joel. Allegedly, Joel and I were sleeping together. People are so cruel. Just nonsense. I am a person, I have always had my own mind. Nobody tells me what to do. Nobody is going to coerce me into doing a darn thing. Renee just said with a straight face there was a board member who had told her that she would have the vote. And that was me. I changed my mind at the last minute because I thought I was doing what was best and I wanted Dr. Vassar to make history. So you have to know that for me, again, this was difficult. Diane had nothing to do with me writing this letter. I will state on the record, when I actually told some of my colleagues that I was going to write this letter, they were shocked. And everybody was like, why? And a few of them said, are you sure? We're worried about you because you're going to get attacked. You shouldn't do it. But I'm a person of faith. I put on the full armor of God. And I prayed about it. And I'm doing what I believe is the best thing for this university. It has nothing personal. I got more to lose and I have lost more, including people that I had close relationships with who now are after me just because I came forward. So I'm gaining nothing and losing a lot to have done what I'm doing. But this woman right here is taking a hit and it's not there. So if you want to blame somebody, blame me, because I can take it. But don't blame people that have nothing to do with what I did. It's wrong. And politically aligned, I'm the most non-politically aligned person probably up here. Because I'm from West Michigan. I'm a nobody. Nobody even knew who I was. I don't know politics. I don't have relationships. The governor coming out, stabbing off. These are people who came out because they love MSU. So stop blaming other people because other people care and they want answers. And they want to get to the bottom of it so that this university grows. Stop having conspiracy theories saying that this is all so Teresa will remain president. It has nothing to do with this. I thank Dennis for his leadership. I'm so happy about what we've done on the presidential search. Nobody's trying to work this out for Teresa. It's unfortunate. She is collateral damage. I've said that so many times. There's no conspiracy here. We want what's best for the university. I support the no hate crime ordinance. Whoever said that, I can't even remember anymore. But I thought it was genius. Thank you, because I think that that is something that we should do. And I would love to work with you all on that. I write ordinances and stuff all the time. I'd be happy to help. Melissa Hudges, I forgot, on our speaker list.
Hudas
made a statement. I wrote it down. She said, if you cannot do your job because of fear, then you shouldn't be doing it. Or something to that extent, she said. I'm sorry. But I agree with that 100%. People elect us, and man, this is hard. I've never wanted to be a politician in my life. I probably will never do anything like this again. But we're here to make these hard decisions, despite what it may cost us individually and personally. I apologize to Dr. Woodruff. I apologize to my board members who, like Sandy, probably are really pissed at me. I may have lost some friendships here because I did this. I'm sorry. I apologize to you all. I don't know what to say, but that I felt cornered and that the only way we could get through this is to have an investigation so this shit could stop. I'm tired of it. I'm sorry, Josh. My son's here and I'm swearing and sorry. And I know I look ugly when I cry and my eyelashes will probably come off. But I want to just say my record on DEI is so freaking strong. So it's so insulting to me that that people say that I don't care about diversity, equity, inclusion, or issues of race or discrimination, because that's been like my life's work. In my community, I have done so much to change race relations. You all don't know me clearly to think anything like that about me. And I'm sorry to Brenda Tracy, because yes, I was angry when I saw the text between Pat O'Keefe and Rima. I think that's probably what took me over the edge, because it's wrong to ever victim bash. And I thought it was wrong to condone or even love a comment that he made talking about you, because I know it takes bravery to come forward. Nobody deserves that. To the survivor community, I know you all don't speak with one voice. I think all of us here want to do the right thing. I think we're closer than ever to doing that. But you have to understand, sometimes you don't all know all the stuff that we know here. So when decisions aren't made, you sometimes don't have the background to understand, because we can't share everything that we know as trustees. You need to trust that we want to do the right thing. People's hearts are in the right place. Sandy, got my eyelashes coming up. Okay. She's looking at me. I'm good. I think that's it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you, Trustee Scott. Trustee Tebay.
I'm going to let Brianna have the last word.
Thank you very much, Interim President Woodruff. That concludes trustee comment.
Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second? All in favor? The meeting is adjourned.